kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Fun show lined up today, and we're going to kick things off. My guest co-host right now, Royal Sefton, welcome back to the show. How are you doing today?
Hey, hanging in there. How are you doing?
That sounded so enthusiastic.
I'm only on 3 cups of coffee so far, man.
How are you doing today? Good.
Okay, I guess.
Put some oomph in it. Come on, Royal. Put some oomph in it.
All right. I am awesome.
God damn right you are, because we are also kicking off the show with a guest joining us from Calypso Media Digital, Christopher Forgy. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing good. Getting a little warm again, but aside from that, doing okay.
You could stay in the air conditioning in the next couple of weeks when it's cold, and when Dungeon 3 comes out, kill some time inside so you can avoid the heat.
Indeed, which I guess that brings us to the big reason you're here today. You are here to talk about Dungeons 3. I know, Royal, you did a preview for us back on, a week or two ago on the Steam version. And you guys are here to chit-chat about Dungeons.
Yes, indeed. I'm delighted. I've just really been enjoying the game's sense of humor, especially. It's well written. It's well spoken. Lots of little in jokes. You blink and you'll miss them. But and having never played any of the prior Dungeons games, it was a whole new experience for me. And I've got a feeling there's going to be something for everybody in this, whether you're new to the series or if you're coming back from the previous game. For those who have actually played Dungeons 2, what can they expect with Dungeons 3?
Dungeons 3, we're saying it's bigger, better, slicker. So there's going to be a couple of differences that we have. One, randomly generated maps going to give you a lot more gameplay. One of the bigger parts, too, that we're really trying to push is it really is like two games in one. You have the real-time strategy, you have the dungeon management sim, but having the ability to go to the overworld, and for those of you who don't know what that is, when you go to the overworld, it's just like majestic, beautiful place with these obnoxiously adorable creatures, so unicorns, maidens, knights, and it's your job to really just evilify that world and go up there. So it's not just building. You go up and you could tear up some pretty sights. So anything adorable, anything unicorn-shaped, you have that ability to go to the overworld and deal with. Also, you have the ability to defend your dungeon as well. So when you have these pesky do-gooders who just want to come to your dungeon and try to save the world, do some good, you could cast spells at them, hurl fire, set up traps, and they're pretty brutal traps. I mean, you'll make them bleed. You'll have knights and maidens coming in, spike-swinging balls to the face, summoning the undead, things of that nature are some really cool additions to Dungeons 3.
Is it wrong that I giggled over here about balls to the face? That shows you where my mind is.
I set myself up for that one, I guess.
So you just covered what it is for people going from Dungeons 2 to Dungeons 3. For the people who aren't familiar with the series at all, give us the sales pitch for Dungeons 3.
So Dungeons 3, like I said, bigger, better, slicker. You're evil. You are basically the ultimate and absolute evil. You're known as the Dungeon Lord. So where we're going with this is, if you haven't played Dungeons 2, this kind of takes off where one of the last DLCs from Dungeons 2 was. And one of the big things is you want to unleash your dark side by creating an underground dungeon from a huge array of rooms, traps, and structures. That's kind of the slogan. You want to raise the most terrifying army the world has ever seen. Choosing despicable creatures. You have orcs, you have zombies, things like that. And you also have a new general named Thalia. I think you were talking about her last week. She is the elf priestess. And you had some pretty funny comments about them from what I remember, how we kind of took her from the fluffy clutches.
Yep. No, she's hilarious because you can tell she's trying so hard to be so sweet and so good, but she gets all her slogans backwards and says things like "for evil," and like she's forgetting her place in the world. And you play that corrupting influence, as I recall, and you just get to watch her completely turn inside out suddenly, and it's a blast.
yeah, she's a fun addition to the story too. She's a general for the Dungeon Lord as well. So you get to see her lead her little snots and demons and, you know, your ultimate army that you have going on there. And she does have that internal conflict too, but it's all right. She uses her powers to basically set that fluffy world on fire.
Yeah, and what's funny I find also is kind of the transition from fluffy to dark is in more ways than one. I mean, like, you can happen upon a party and you'll get to hear their happy fluffy party music, and it suddenly turns to, you know, dramatic and dark as you're in the, you know, full assault against them. Or when you're roaming around with the shadow, it's a neat touch how you watch the landscape around you disintegrate and succumb to evil and then sort of pick itself back up again when they're no longer in reach.
Yeah, that's a great feature, and we actually do have a name for that feature, and it's called evilfying. And that is the actual verb, is evilfying.
Get to evilfy the world.
I like that.
Yeah.
One tile. Yeah,
so when you see that coming up, yeah, you'll see people whistling and playing and doing some work, and all of a sudden they'll be gagged and bound and put to some torture device, and all the green grass turns into black brimstone and stuff like that. A lot of fun to watch.
So it's a family game.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes. If your family likes torture and building beer breweries and evil priestesses, yes.
Nice.
Yeah, I was going to talk about the breweries especially. I mean, that's probably my favorite part of the whole tech tree, is having to build that brewery to really motivate your army up a bit.
Well, I don't know what the breweries are, so why don't you guys tell me, what are the breweries in the game?
It is exactly what it sounds like. You can make beer breweries in your dungeon. They quench thirst. They keep your characters happy. And what's funny is it's not just for thirst quenching. It actually can bring up your health, too. So beer can actually help your characters if they're injured.
Gotcha. So you mentioned thirst. Are there survival elements in the game as well?
Yeah, I mean, well, you have to remember these guys are going to battle and stuff. There's a level 4 where thirst comes into play. And, you know, you can get these guys hurt, which is actually a funny part when it comes to breweries or when it comes to gobblers and stuff like that. So when it does come to the health element, you have to make sure that you keep your snots happy, that you keep your army happy, because they're not just like loyal servants that follow blindly. You have to hook them up. You have to pay them. So they work for gold, food, compensation. They will actually go on strike if you don't keep them happy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, what's kind of funny about that is when it comes to keeping everybody happy, do you have to slap around the little snots, or is that just kind of part of being evil?
Well, actually, it's funny. The slapping, as funny as it is to watch, it does have an effect. Your workers, your little snots, they will work more efficiently if you slap them.
Nice. Yeah, I was drawing a little parallel to black and white on that one, because you know, you have the option of going good or evil in that game, but with this game, since it's pretty much foregone conclusion you're going evil, it almost seems like that's just standard maintenance or micromanagement to just kind of smack them around a little bit.
Yeah, and for those of you who can't see what we're talking about, you are an actual hand, you know, the Dungeon Lord. Yeah, it is this dark hand, so it is a giant hand that's slapping these snots around.
That's incredible. The more I hear about this game, the more excited I am for it.
And there's a sound effect too. You hear the slap. It's a very efficient slap when they do it. So
can you do the sound effect?
I don't think I could do it myself, but when you play the game, when you hear the smack, it's pretty funny. Not only that, there are other efficient ways to make your workers more efficient. Like if you want one of your guys to collect gold for your treasury, there is a traditional treasury feature. You can actually pick your workers up and drop them where you want them to go. So there are effective things that aren't just for humor that you can use as well.
Yeah, that hand is more than just a cursor. I one of the things that was kind of interesting on the learning curve piece is I was very inefficiently moving my army out toward the gate, and I was picking them up one at a time, not realizing I could actually, instead of going back and forth and back and forth, you can actually grab them all in one hand. It's a very powerful tool. You know, you can pick up a whole squadron at a time with it. Which is pretty
sick. Yeah, if you're going to the overworld, absolutely. I mean, if you're just moving them around, you could pick up 5 characters at one time. So if you want to throw them, bring them to the overworld, drop them somewhere, yeah, it's not just piece by piece. It's a very effective tool, time management wise.
But when you actually get to the overworld, that's when the gameplay element kind of changes a bit, actually. You don't take the hand with you outside of your dungeon, because that's your realm of influence, right?
Yeah, that's different. That's where you're more hands-on with the action out there. So the Dungeon Lord, he's doing his thing inside the actual dungeon itself. Well, once you bring like your orcs or whatever that you're bringing outside to fight, yeah, you're not going out there with them.
So right. The outside stuff, is that more like action RPG style, or is that like RTS style?
I guess you could say it's more like RTS style when they do it. You're pretty immersed in the action too. There's blood and stuff like that. So it's kind of like this overhead view when you're navigating around. So I'd say RTS, but like I said, it's you're pretty immersed in it too. It's pretty real time.
Nice. Sounds good.
Remind me a lot of the stuff I really liked about Warcraft, Starcraft, and, you know, with some fairly powerful mobs, gather a squadron, go out, explore the map, and find things to evilify, especially because you can start mining. I don't know if that's really the right term, gathering evil. One of the things that you'll need to develop more advanced mobs of your own.
Man, yeah, like you evilifying is actually... Sorry, I
was going to say, he mentioned Warcraft. Do you guys remember the days when Warcraft wasn't an MMO?
I don't want to disappoint anybody, but I don't play much Warcraft.
Warcraft 2.
Does that mean the interview? The interview's over.
Hey,
disappoint.
Everyone who listens to the show knows I'm a console guy. In particular, I'm an Xbox guy. So I'm actually excited that Dungeons 3 is going to be coming to Xbox One. I believe Dungeons 2 made it to the PS4, didn't it?
I believe so. This will be a multi-platform release, so it'll be out on Steam for PC, it's going to come out on Xbox One, PlayStation 4, there'll be box retail versions as well, so it's going to be a full release with this.
So I am very excited. Yay!
Yeah, likewise. It's a real kick, and like I said, there's a lot of humor in it, too. You know, in the intro, there are so many jokes just in the first couple minutes, you blink and you'll miss them. I can't count how many references are in there, and I assume probably even some callbacks for folks that have played the older ones too.
Yeah, pop culture references, things like that, a lot of jokes. The narrator is funny. That's probably one of the fan favorites. Even in the tutorials, if you fail a tutorial and you lose, the narrator will make fun of you.
Can't say as I had the displeasure, but I actually might go back and intentionally fail that just for fun. So...
Okay. There's even an extra tutorial they give at the end, and when you play it, he does get frustrated that you need an extra one because you're cutting into his drinking time.
Yes, he's going to settle in with a drink and a comic book, and he's like, oh well, go ahead, you know, and you end up learning how to defend your dungeon against intruders, and it's a lot of fun.
That sounds pretty great. It's not often that games put in intentional humor, and it really works well. It feels like so many games try to shoehorn in humor and it just seems to fall flat. So it's good to hear that this is an actual legitimately funny game.
Yeah, you know, it has the Calypso funny style. You know, we also have Tropico and stuff like that that comes out. So I think having humor and kind of like this dark, twisted setting, it really does work. So it's funny because, like I said, you're building a dungeon, you're evilifying, you're taking on these do-gooders and anything adorable and bringing pain to them. But it's really with a humorous twist.
Nice.
Yeah, and I remember also the Gobbler Farm. That was actually kind of one of the bits that I enjoyed the most. And I don't know, there's some intrinsic humor to all the aesthetics behind it. You know, when you build the Gobbler Farm, you get to see this fake landscape around them, almost like fooling them into thinking they're not underground. And I drag and drop some of my warriors in there to remind them to eat occasionally because they'd be moaning and groaning off on the other end of the dungeon about how hungry they are and not doing anything about it. But I love it.
You raise these gobblers just to get eaten.
Yep. You basically, this is your in tandem with the brewery, of course, just another one of those things that you need to keep your warriors happy and healthy and, you know, not going hungry into battle.
Yeah, don't get attached to your gobblers too much because they're not going to last too long. they're there to be consumed.
Yeah, no, it's an absolute kick. I really enjoyed playing this game. I'm glad I had an opportunity to preview it. Hey, so, you know, just so we got a grasp of what happens when you get invaded, if you don't plan accordingly, you don't build the traps, you don't manage your army well enough, you know, what ultimately are they going for? Are they trying to kill the elf, or are they trying to take down the entire dungeon by another means?
It's the dungeon heart they're going after. The dungeon heart is all of your power right there. So if they get to your dungeon heart, that's where things go bad. It's your responsibility to make sure it's protected. But like I said, at one point, you know, once you start researching, using all like the mana and evilifying and building everything up, once you get those traps, once you get all of, you know, your snots, your orcs, your undead, whatever you have there, they're there to defend it. And spells are really good too. You also will be able to develop a certain series of spells. And with that, I mean, you have some pretty brutal stuff. You could hurl arrows at people. You could hurl fire. One of my favorite things is building like this little energy wall, and then I summon the undead behind that wall and trap them with the undead.
Nice. And so about the undead, I haven't been far enough in the single player campaign to experience that. I have the understanding you can basically turn your invaders.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you could make them evil versions of themselves. You can kill them. You could torture them. You could turn them into zombies. You have a variety of things that you could do with these do-gooders.
Oh, that's sick.
So if you really want to do that, absolutely, you have that option. And so you have a couple of different things that you can do. So it's not just like this basic, hold on one second, actually, I just need to make sure, just to step away from an edit real quick, I just need to make sure my phone is plugged in. I'm sorry about that. There we go, sorry.
Nice.
What's it called? Yeah, but you have a couple of different options that you can do. I mean, you even have like succubus that could just basically take the evil out of you with devices. It seems like the zombie part, you know, everyone loves zombies. So you want to turn them into the undead, definitely a great option to do. I like killing them when they invade. You know, that's a big part. Like the ball and chain with spikes on it. You'll see in one of the tutorials, probably ones that you had in the preview mode, there's like a bed of spikes that come right from under the ground. So as soon as they walk into the dungeon with that part, there's like this giant bed of spikes that like rise from beneath you. So I like to hurl arrows from above while those spikes come from below.
Nice. Yeah, no, the traps are a real kick because, you know, a lot of them can be timing based, you know, whether it's rolling a boulder at them or that swinging trap. That's just, you know, a lot of fun. Definitely a good micromanagement piece as far as the gameplay goes. But, you know, one thing I didn't get a chance to get into and I wish I had, and I'm going to get back to it as soon as I can, is multiplayer. So what kind of multiplayer campaign or what kind of multiplayer options can you expect to see in this?
It's two-player. I mean, you have a two-player multiplayer mode you can do, and that's another thing that separates it from the first one as well. So as far as that goes, like I said, that's something that really that Dungeons 1 and Dungeons 2 didn't have, so it's just a little something that we're experimenting more with.
Okay, so collaborative dungeon keeping. So you could have one that's smacking around the little snots and making sure everybody's getting their beer and their gobblers, and you got another one who's maybe trying to conquer the overworld, for example. That actually worked out real well. Yeah, because I found I was doing a lot of back and forth, which is part of the fun, but it's also part of what makes it frantic, you know. And one of those good examples of the writing that really shows up is as these hero parties happen upon your dungeon, they've got some interesting things to say about what they might have been looking for. I kind of get the impression that there's some jokes about what kind of businesses they were frequenting and that they're no longer there, that you've taken down.
Yeah, and you know what? One of the cool parts is, you know, especially when those do-gooders come in, I mean, when you get rid of them, you really do wipe them off the map completely too. So there's a long-term effect when they do stuff like that. So when you take them down, like for instance, when they come to you, you know, you could regenerate, you can get more of your army to go in. When someone comes in, especially from the overworld, whatever they're doing from that time, they're gone for good once they come to get you and you take them down.
That sounds pretty awesome. It really does.
Yeah. No,
I'm jealous hearing you guys talk about this game, and I'm just sitting here like, all I could do is look at screenshots.
You got to get in there, man.
Yeah, it's a real kick, Joe. I think you'll like it, too.
We're, what, like 2 weeks away from the release on consoles? I think it's, what, 13th? So next Friday on Steam. Is it the 17th on console?
Yeah, 17th on console for PlayStation 4 and Xbox One.
Are you guys looking at possibly a Switch version at all?
I haven't been informed of anything about that yet, so not to my knowledge. As of right now, the official announcement that it will be on PC, Xbox One, and PlayStation 4. That's what's official for it.
Nice. Like I said, I'm definitely looking forward to it. After Dungeons 2 was only on PlayStation, I'm very happy to see number 3 hitting the Xbox as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a multi-platform world, so it's exciting to see that players from all backgrounds are really getting the chance to get into this series, and I'm glad we have the opportunity to get it out there more.
Nice. I know you mentioned that there's going to be online multiplayer. Is there going to be any kind of cross-platform play at all?
No, not to my knowledge. I could dig a little bit into that, but that hasn't been anything announced to me.
Gotcha. Is there any word on a possible Windows 10 release on the Windows Store with the Play Anywhere?
Oh, you mean like the Play? You mean like, you know, when you hit pause on your Xbox and you pick up later on your PC?
Yeah.
So as far as that goes, no, not to my knowledge about that either. We haven't been getting any official announcements about play anywhere.
Gotcha. Okay, I'll step back out so you guys could go back to your conversation.
Sure, sure. Stuff like that I could dig into, but yeah, we haven't been shared with anything like that.
Well, so you mentioned that the game has procedurally generated maps. Is that correct?
There will be like randomly generated maps. It's just a bigger game, so you don't get bored with it. So you will have randomly generated maps. In addition to that single player campaign, you have 20 missions. You have more than 20 hours of playtime as well.
Ooh. Nice. That's what I was going to ask about. Yeah, how extensive it gets. Because like I said, I haven't had a chance to finish that single player campaign. I'm really looking forward to doing that. But good 20 hours plus of game time is definitely, I think, worth the money.
There's a lot more game than Dungeons 2. There's a lot more to it.
Nice.
What kind of a percentage split do you think there is between the actual like dungeon and the trap setting as opposed to the overworld RTS style?
I don't know. I don't know if there's an exact percentage to that, to tell you the truth.
Royal, what's your experience been in playing it?
Well, I mean, you spend a good amount of the first half of any campaign really focusing on building up your dungeon, and then once you've got a decent group of warriors to go out on out into the overworld, I mean, then you're going to spend more time outside. But you know, it's probably maybe 50-50. It depends on how much of the tech tree you're going to climb, you know. But once you start to build your gobbler farms out and you start expanding your dungeon, then you're going to be spending more and more time out in the overworld so that you can evilify those landmarks and start harvesting evil so you can expand what goes on down there. So it's kind of one hand washes the other in my experience. You know, the more you explore out in the overworld, the more powerful your dungeon can ultimately get too.
Yeah,
because there's some stuff about exploring the overworld that really benefits the development down below as well. So yeah, it's a good split, and it you spend more time in one initially and start to spend more time out in the other as you go forward.
I still love that term, evilify.
Yeah, evilify.
Yeah, evilify. Yeah. And it's spelled just the way that that you think it would be, just evilify. So it's exactly what the verb sounds like, and it's in when we're talking about it's exactly the way that we're describing it too. Like when you see it happening, you're like, oh, that's evilify.
That is awesome. I can't wait. It sounds. With the whole turning things evil, it reminds me a lot of like Overlord. That's what it was.
Yeah, and you know, I think this game really does stand on its own too. Sometimes we hear comparisons, but just when you see the humor, when you see the RTS, you see the dungeon management sim part, all the action in the overworld, you're going to see that this kind of stands out on its own.
Oh, it definitely doesn't look like any other game I've played. It just the whole turning things evil. I love games where you get to be the bad guy.
Yeah. Technically, the do-gooders and all the people who would traditionally be good are the nemesis in this game.
So it's good seeing something where the roles reverse. I always enjoy games where you get to be the bad guy doing the evil shit, and the good guys are trying to save the day, and you're like, no, I'm just going to kill you.
Well, that's basically where Dungeons 3 lies.
Yeah, it's very gratifying, believe me. Especially, like I said, all the fluffy bunny music right before you happen upon, and you know what I consider the enemy squadron. You know the do-gooders, and just to crush them, it's a real gas.
Yeah.
Good stuff. So I know Dungeons 3 is coming out. Calypso seemed to have had a really, really big year with, I know Vikings came out this year, Blackguards we just covered recently. What other big tentpole titles does Calypso have in the works?
You'll see a couple other titles that we'll have coming out. We have Railway Empire that we had a new trailer that we debuted at E3. That's also around the same time that Dungeons 3 had a new trailer come out. At Gamescom this year, we had a gameplay trailer for Shadows Awakening. That's the new part of the Heretic Kingdom series. And we have an adventure title coming out called The Inner World, The Last Wind Monk, which is a follow-up to the original game called The Inner World. So we have a pretty solid lineup coming out. And of course, you know, everyone's talking about the big announcement we made for Tropico 6 at E3 this year as well.
Tell us about the Tropico 6 stuff. If anyone missed out on it, what's the big news there?
Well, the big news is that there is a Tropico 6 coming out, so that's obvious. That's obviously the big part, too. In addition to that, you see a lot of new features coming out. We had some really cool trailers that we released. In addition to that, there's a couple new features like bridges you could connect to other islands. You could actually steal landmarks like the Eiffel Tower and the Statue of Liberty and bring them to Tropico.
Nice.
So we do have some exciting new stuff coming out. So Tropico obviously is the big one, but Railway Empire, yeah, that's our railway sim coming out. You know, we have an RPG like The Shadows Awakening, which is the third part of that series. And The Inner World, The Last Wind Monk, this very Toonie-style adventure game, has been getting a lot of really good feedback from both consumers and press as far as people checking it out. So something really outside the box that you may want to look at.
I know, I believe our show covered The Inner World, it got remastered and re-released on consoles, I think.
Yeah, that one for this one that we're doing, we're going to have, it will be a console version that will be a multi-platform release as well. So we'll have that on PC, we'll have that on Xbox One and PlayStation 4. There will be versions where you can actually get both titles as well. So you'll be able to get The Inner World and The Inner World, The Last Wind Monk, just to give some people a little bit of backstory from the original story.
Nice. I think the original game we covered, we worked with Head Up Games on that. Are you guys partnering up with them on this?
Yes, them and Fizbin, and we're publishing it. So it's a really cool relationship with that. And like I said, it's just this really cool Toonie style, very whimsical. Roly-poly is actually one of the adjectives that you'll see a lot in the press releases too. So it's just a really, especially if you like that more traditional animated style as opposed to like, you know, these 3D, you know, photorealistic games, it's just a really cool artistic and whimsical style. A lot of humor thrown in there too.
I love the humor. Funny games yeah, need to happen more often. It just, when a game makes you smile, it's just a better experience in my eyes.
Yeah, the Inner World's more of an enchanting type humor. A little bit more innocent than Dungeons or something like Tropico.
Yeah, then fart jokes.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not going to see anything near as brutal in the Inner World as you would see in some of the titles that we just talked about. So something a little bit different. A little bit more adorable, a little bit more enchanting than some of the other titles that we have.
I'm curious to know more. You mentioned Shadows Awakening. I actually haven't followed this game at all. And when you mentioned it, I looked it up. This game looks awesome.
Yeah. This game, that's a little bit more serious. You know, a little bit, there's a little bit of humor in there, but this is, you know, mainly an isotropic RPG. And what you're doing is you're consuming souls through it. As far as that goes, so you're playing as different characters. You're consuming souls that we call puppets. So it's a really cool mission. So there's puzzles, there's action. So a little bit different than you would see from like the strategy that you'd see in like Dungeons 3 and Tropico.
Gotcha. Is that, I'm assuming that'll be more along the lines of like Vikings as opposed to Blackguards?
I'm trying to think of what game you could really compare it to, because like when I say that this is a different type of gameplay, I mean, it really is a different type of gameplay. You have two different realms, 15 different characters, five main characters, different storylines. So like I said, I hate to say the cliche, but this game kind of stands on its own as well. So it's kind of hard to compare it to something else. It's a one player game that you play as multiple characters in different realms.
Interesting. Yeah, that sounds real. Is that going to be a PC only kind of thing, or will that be appearing on consoles as well?
That'll be appearing on consoles. Just about everything that I've talked about, anything that we've launched right now will be console and PC releases. Yes. That seems to be the direction that we're going. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm happy to hear that, because I know for a while, so many games would only come out on PC, and then it was like, I know first with Tropico and then with Dungeons 2, it appeared on PS4, but nothing on Xbox. And now it seems everything's coming out on everything, which is how I like it.
Definitely.
Yes, so as far as the Calypsos and as far as these releases go, I mean, it's not a guarantee that's going to be every single console. I know, you know, for instance, Sudden Strike, which came out in August, that came out for, you know, PC and exclusively launched on PlayStation 4. But in general, we're seeing that we're not really strictly staying with PC, and that's not a guarantee. I don't know what they're doing in the future releases, but everything that I've told you about, whether it's Dungeons 3, The Inner World, The Last Wind Monk, Railway, Tropico, all that stuff, you know, these are going to be console and PC releases.
Gotcha. You mentioned Sudden Strike. Is there any shot of that hitting Xbox at all, or is that going to stay PS4 only?
We've had no further announcements right now. It just came out this past summer in August, so it was a PC and PlayStation 4 release.
Yeah, I know. I believe CJ, when he was still part of the show, he covered that one, and he really seemed to enjoy it. So sounds like another.
Yeah, we brought back an old series.
It's good stuff. It's good seeing old series come back and get another chance again. I know THQ Nordic has been doing a lot with past games that kind of flew under the radar, getting another shot. And it's good to see these older series reborn in this new generation of consoles and PC.
Everything old is new again.
Seriously.
Yeah, kind of giving a new breath of life into it. Yeah, absolutely. So we were happy to be able to kind of do that. And it's fun seeing some of these sequels come up, whether it's one of the originals we have here, like Tropico, or like I said, something like Innerworld, where we didn't work on the original. And now we have the chance to really bring the title to light.
Speaking of older games getting another shot, has Calypso done much with the backward compatibility program on Xbox One at all?
That I'd have to look into. That I'd have to look into a little more.
I'm trying to remember. Showed up, but I kind of want to see the first Templar show up on Xbox One.
Bring it all back. I know that was one of their big announcements about 2 years back, being able to do that. I mean, Microsoft-wise, so I'd have to look into that for you.
Nice. Yeah, I would love to see more support come through the backward compatibility program. I know a lot of it is technical, a lot of it is legal, but I think the more games that show up playable in that program, the better.
Yeah, it gives people an opportunity to play games that they once own. So, if we have anything, we usually make announcements for anything coming out. So I haven't heard anything in the pipeline for it yet, but I can keep you posted.
Sounds good. So what games are you looking forward to? Not just from Calypso, but like what games are you interested in right now?
Oh, off the record, I don't know if I can actually address that.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I have to check it out. So off the record, yeah, sorry. Yeah, I don't know if I'm allowed to do that. Yeah, trust me.
Ah, damn. Okay.
Trust me, I love talking shop about video games, but yeah, that's a...
Got to keep it on the record for this appearance, huh?
Yeah, I gotta keep things straight with that, yeah.
Does that mean I can't ask you about getting pictures with Dolph Ziggler on your Twitter account?
I'm sure you could ask me about that. And Alexa Bliss, don't forget about that one.
So, how good did she smell?
Oh, God, really? she was... I could say that they were both very nice. They were both really professional, and they were really nice to everybody that they met there. And so it was a cool experience seeing them work with the fans.
Are you a wrestling fan?
I am.
Nice.
Yeah. That was at the GameStop Expo, and that's where the managers for GameStop were there to sample the games, and they had a consumer day as well. And we showcased Dungeons 3 in the Innerworld, the last wind bump. So it was really exciting being able to show those games and also letting those games kind of stand on their own as well. Those were the two primary games. We didn't have any other demos there at our stand.
Gotcha. Did anybody cool drop by to try out the games?
I mean, it's such a big show. So it was consumers and GameStop employees, really. So that was like the really...
Hello? Oh, no.
Yeah, I think it's just us, man.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Dang.
It's like, this son of a bitch is going to ask me about wrestling. I'm not talking. Let me try calling him back.
Alrighty.
Hello. Hey, sorry about that.
There you are. Yay.
We lost you. Sorry. Stand by for technical difficulties.
Oh, man. Technical issues are always fun. So where were we?
Just right during GameStop, the GameStop Expo.
GameStop. That's right. You get a lot of people dropping by trying out the games at these kind of expos, or I'm not sure if you've gone to E3 or any other expos. Have there been
there at E3 this year.
Have you seen any really, really funny experiences of like people trying to come up and try a game and they either just get their ass kicked by the game and they're like pissed off and grumpy about it, or someone who just comes and destroys your game by being really good?
I think the funnier experience, and like it was something I brought up before, when people were going up and trying Dungeon 3 and they were losing in the tutorials and they were kind of getting made fun of by the narrator. I think that was a really cool experience. that was yeah, I mean, it's funny because you think, oh, they're getting made fun of, and they basically enjoyed it every time. So they'd be like, oh really, a tutorial? And it'd be like, especially if it's the first tutorial or the overworld one. So yeah, I think that was a real fun experience to see people losing at that.
Oh, so fun. I love watching people just do terrible at things. It makes me feel better about myself.
That's awesome.
And if you, we actually had, it within the last few weeks, we actually do have a Dungeons 3 in 3 minutes, trailer. So it does give you like the lowdown within 3 minutes, and the narrator actually narrates that entire trailer too.
Oh, nice. So where can people keep up to everything going on with Calypso and with Dungeons and everything else? Where can people stay in touch?
I mean, our Twitter page, we're very interactive with that. If you go on Calypso Media, you could look up our YouTube page as well. So anything for the U.S. and Canada audience, if you want to look up our trailers, we'll have those sectioned off as well. So you can keep up with all of our new trailers, social media, calypsomedia.com. You know, we have just about everything that you would expect.
Gotcha. So, Royal, did you have any other questions that you had that you didn't get to ask yet?
Not really. I'm just kind of curious what kind of beer they drink.
I guess it's a micro brewer just because they're making it on their own. So,
that was such a kick when I saw that the first time. I'm really stoked about this game. I think the humor is awesome. I think the gameplay is great. There's a lot to do in it. You know, so hey.
Oh my God! Does that mean they're hipsters?
I wasn't going to go into that, but between the microbrews and then I've had a couple of the do-gooders say they were looking for like like a vegan pub or something. I don't remember exactly what they said.
Oh my God! So, yeah, this game sounds amazing.
The hipsters.
This game sounds so goddamn good.
Yeah, I'm a big fan, so I think people who pick it up, they're in for a treat. It's going to be great.
Oh, man. So, Christopher, what can you tell us about the game that we haven't asked about? Like, what kind of good stuff is hidden in there that people may not have asked during interviews at all?
Gems, I think we went over a pretty good amount of it. Like I said, fun references and pop culture references are a big thing. Like I said, the spells, I know that we went over, the spells are probably one of my favorite parts with defending the dungeon. That's something there's a giant tentacle that you could put with a spell that actually fights people off. I don't think we went over that too. It's just like one.
No, we didn't.
Yeah. So that was pretty funny to go over as well. So yeah, I think we mainly hit all the big stuff right over here. Like I said, designing your army, new management when it comes to your general and things like that. Like I said, 20 missions and 20 hours of gameplay. And that's a really big part. Like I said, one of the big features, we're calling it, it's a bigger game. It's a bigger game in general than the previous ones.
Nice. I'm very, very excited for this one. I know we've been chatting for a while, so I don't want to keep you all day. That's why I'm asking if there's anything else that you want to discuss about the game or anything Royal that you wanted to ask. I feel bad. I hate being in situations where I haven't been able to play the game myself yet.
Well, we're going to have to get you on there and maybe if we're on the same platform or something, play against each other or with each other, however it's supposed to go down.
You're going to have to get the Xbox version, Royal, because my PC is hot garbage.
hot garbage. All right. There's a co-op, so.
Yep, I think co-op mode's going to be a kick. So yeah, maybe I'll have to do that.
And so, multiplayer's improved, so improved multiplayer, co-op possibility and stuff like that. So you'll be able to do that as well. So that'll be a lot of fun. And like I said, you'll be able to pick it up on Steam on PC on the 13th, and it'll be coming out for console on the 17th.
And how much is it going to be?
It depends on which one that you get. The Steam version is going to be a little bit less, so it really depends on where you're picking it up.
I've always wondered why Steam games are cheaper than console.
That I couldn't tell you. That's their platform right there. So, I don't have an answer for that one.
Damn it, Royal. Why can't you answer these questions?
Well, I will tell you something, though, that Xbox Play Anywhere was pretty nice because I only had to pay once for Resident Evil 7, you know, and I got it on both systems. And when I realized it was a first-person game, that worked out to my advantage because I am terrible with a controller trying to do that. I had to go keep my mouse for that game. So that was huge.
There wasn't the one thing that I can bring up is there's not too much of a big transition for me. You know, I was playing Dungeons 3 on PC, but going over to a PlayStation 4, it wasn't too jarring. You know, I was playing it on console when we were at the GameStop Expo, and it was just a nice experience. We also had it at E3 on console as well. So going back and forth, you know, if you're it's not this major massive learning curve where you're just going to have a terrible experience, in my opinion anyway. I've tried it on both, so. You know, depending on what your preference is, I think you're going to have an enjoyable experience on the game. Nice. As far as control go.
Well, again, I don't want to keep you all day. So, Christopher, thank you so much for coming on the show and chatting with us. Everybody else, stick around. We're going to take a quick musical break, and we'll be back with some reviews and other shit that we have to take care of. Royal, thanks for coming by as well. It was fun having you on for this.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
Christopher, do you have any final words to wrap this up?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to keep up with us, Calypso Media USA on Twitter, or you check out Calypso Media on YouTube. So if you want to keep up to date, and we do have a newsletter you could sign up for on our official website.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for hanging around. Another quick thanks to Royal and to Christopher Calypso for dropping by and hanging out for the beginning there. Moving on, we got a bunch of reviews to take care of, and we're going to kick things off with our good friend Pernell Vaughn. Pernell, how are you doing today?
I'm depressed and miserable, man. Rick and Morty's gone.
Holy shit, that was loud.
That's how I feel. That's just... it just goes to show you how emotional I am about losing one of my favorite shows for... an undeterminable amount of time.
Hopefully it won't be as long as it was between seasons 2 and 3, because holy shit, a year and a half sucked.
Yeah, it did. Like, I was talking to you about it a little bit earlier, but at the end of the last episode, Mr. Poopy Butthole comes back on again as a little joke, and he makes one random comment about, what did you do since the show went off the air, since the show was last on? And I actually responded to him. I actually listed out everything that I had done since season 2 went off the air.
Oh, Pernell.
Then I realized I don't understand anymore.
My dear sweet Pernell.
I'm lost. Now I have to find a show to watch that I like. That's difficult.
You know what else you could look forward to?
What?
The fact that they're actually bringing back Szechuan sauce.
Only for a day, but I hope to get some.
Yep. So everyone listening, mark your calendars. October 7th, this coming Saturday, you got one day to see what the fuck Rick and Morty were talking about with this Szechuan sauce.
If you weren't alive during the airing of Disney's Mulan, which is literally when that sauce was out, I remember liking it, but I don't remember it being like the bee's knees, but it's a one-day thing. It'll be fun. I'll go grab some shit.
Are there any McDonald's around you that are going to be doing it?
I'm going to have to find out, honestly. I mean, unfortunately now, you know what I wish they did? I wish Rick and Morty were chiming in for the KFC Oriental sauce. That would have had me off my ass, breaking down some doors for some sauces, because the Oriental wings were the best. And they were definitely a limited time only, and they never came back.
There is, I think, one that's within like a half hour from me.
Ugh.
Yeah,
we got a couple around here. There's got to be at least one. I'm going to look it up after this, after we're done reviewing, because now I have to know. I'll feel weird otherwise.
I'm looking on their website now, and like the closest city shows is Scranton, and there's only one in Scranton that's going to do it.
Damn.
So,
you would think the stuff's not that hard to fucking reproduce that they can't just sell it. Instead, I'd be like, well, one day only.
They
run around the parking lot for a bucket of sauce. Not even a bucket. You're going to get one cup.
I don't know.
They're going to give a single dipping cup. Like, we got to ration this stuff. The chef that made it died as he was making the last batch. We lost the recipe. But Rick and Morty says, so we have to comply. Come on.
I like that how they're bringing it back to celebrate their brand new buttermilk crispy tenders. It's like, didn't you motherfuckers just get rid of your... what was it? Chicken Selects were their last chicken fingers they had.
And they were the real deal. They should have never let those go.
I know. They were awesome. And now they're going to do new buttermilk crispy tenders.
It's like we took the ones you liked, threw them in the trash, then pulled them back out and removed the skin and put new skin on them.
I don't.
We call them buttermilk tenders.
Like, even their McNuggets now, like, ever since they switched to, like, all white meat chicken, I'm like, you know, I missed when they were, like, your fake chicken slurry nuggets.
their pink slurry nugget.
I know, they were clearly disgusting, horrible things you should never put in your mouth, but they were goddamn good. And now these normal chicken nuggets, I have to double the amount of sauce I use on them. They're just... I don't know, man.
And for all we know, they fools. It could be still the pink slurry, but they took some of the pink out.
Yeah, now it's white slurry. Ugh.
Yeah. They want you to think they made it better for you. I know the truth. I'm not stupid.
Anyway, this is not our normal episode of food McDonald's talk, so let's talk games. What do you think?
Well, as long as I can fit McDonald's in there somewhere.
You are here to talk about two games, and we are going to start off with Coldcept Revolt, developed by Omiya Soft, published by NIS America, released October 3rd on Nintendo 3DS for $39.99. Follow Alan, a new recruit for the Rebel Free Bat Forces, as you fight for freedom from the tyranny of Count Krannis? Krannis?
I just call him the Count and let it ride.
Sounds good. From the tyranny of the Count. Build your deck, create new strategies, and dominate the board in Coldcept Revolt. With all the classic elements veterans love, yet a gentle learning curve for newcomers, Coldcept Revolt is the best Coldcept yet to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the series. Purnell, what do you think of this new game?
I've been a fan of Coldcept since it first came to the States, which, if I'm not mistaken, was on the PlayStation 2 many moons ago. Thus far, at least, I don't think they're too far off the mark on this being probably one of the best ones, if not the best one they've done. First of all, to explain the game to people who have no idea what the hell a Coldcept is. Coldcept is what happens when you take Magic and infuse it with Monopoly, but actually fix Monopoly so it isn't trash. So you have the idea of collecting property, you have the idea of property management and getting groups of colors together to build their value up. You have the means of which to level up those properties. Think houses and hotels. You have the means to actually transform properties. So think, you know, you have St. Charles, New York, and Tennessee together, but you want a fourth property called Baltic Avenue. So you take Baltic Avenue, pay a little bit extra money. Now Baltic is Baltic, and it's also orange. So now you have a four chain instead of a three. It's really awesome in that regard. And in addition to that, when you land on a property, you don't have to just pay the money. What actually happens in this game is when you claim a property, you claim it by dropping what's called. You drop a freaking monster on it. The monsters are represented by cards. And the monsters have different abilities, such as attack first or variable attack and defense, in health, and a variety of other things that make them pretty much unique amongst each other. You place these on the property to claim it, and if another person steps on your property, they can either choose to pay you or try to duke it out to steal the property from you, which means they themselves play a monster along with an augmentation card, which could be an attack buff, a defense buff, maybe something that converts your attack type, all a number of things. And you then try to beat them out for the property, and if you win, they get knocked out, you move in. Otherwise, you got to pony up, sucker. So, lastly but not least, there's actually two other things I should mention that makes it different. So, in addition to all that stuff, unlike Monopoly, which I've been clamoring for freaking years, this game has variable maps. So, it's not just walking around in a circle to get to go to collect $200. In this game, you actually have to go to different checkpoints, a number of checkpoints, and each map has its own set of them. And you have to cross every checkpoint to be considered having taken a lap, which is then how you get your bonus. So sometimes there might be areas on the map where you don't even ever have to step into if you don't want to. But there might be times when you want to step in. Like maybe someone owns all the property on the outer rim, so you take your chances on the inner ring. And stuff like that. It's pretty cool in that regard. And yet, you can't just necessarily play it safe the entire time, because if the person's up on you and you can't catch up, one of the ways to knock them down a peg is by stealing their property. So you're going to want to engage in combat sometimes. So you're not necessarily going to be avoiding everything. It's just an ingenious game, and I honestly have had a ton of fun playing it since I started reviewing it. In addition to the story quest mode, which has different, I guess I'll say, quests, which is like a scenario and a description of the scenario, and then that stage has multiple maps that you have to beat to complete the story component of that quest environment. There's that. There's also a solo mode that you can play where if you just want to engage and the fact that you want to have some matches and earn some experience points for your character or money to buy new cards, you can do that. And as you encounter characters in the game, you unlock them to be used in solo mode, either as a person you control or as a character that is controlled by the AI to attack you. There's online and local versus. You can play your friends and piss them off or have yourself pissed off by your jackass friends.
Online and play?
Online. You have to unlock it, though, but it doesn't take very long.
That's pretty cool. Play.
Oh, yeah. Like I got the review copy from you. This is in one case where I actually still bought the game. I figure if I end up getting a friend that really wants to play it and would actually play it, I let them borrow my copy just so they can actually play against me. And when they're done, I'm like, take my damn game back.
You could always just send me your copy, since technically I sent you a copy.
But I love the cart. But you honestly, if you were considering the game, though, I'm not even joking. If you're interested in this kind of stuff, I totally think you should get it. I think you would dig it. It's just a great game. And it does have the shop environment where you can actually go online, local or online. I haven't really done much with the online shop because when I was reviewing it, none of that stuff existed yet. Wonder why? Because it was pre-release. So, but there's an online shop. I'm not sure what's available there, but I'm going to wager that there are some nifty things you can buy there. But then there's also a in-game shop that you can use. You can take a currency, one from battles, and you can buy new packs of cards. But in the spirit of the game, it's not a pack of cards. It's a magic stone full of elemental energy.
Clearly.
Cold seppage. But you can buy them, and there's different stone types, which have different types of cards in them and different stylings or themes. So you can constantly kind of build up a deck of cards. Now, one thing I like about this game compared to something like, say, Yu-Gi-Oh! Or Magic, though some might not, is the fact that this game limits you to 50 cards. It requires your deck to have 50 cards. So as in Yu-Gi-Oh! You can have a minimum of 40 and a maximum of, like 80 or 100 or some crap, which leads to additional aspects of analysis paralysis for people like myself. This game
we've covered multiple times on the show that you were awful with decision paralysis.
Yes, I freaking am. So, like, I have occasionally swapped out cards in my deck. If I say this, for example, I open a pack of, I crack a stone of energy. God, Jesus. And I get some cold step cards out of it. If I can see an obvious swapper, I'll just swap it into the deck. and just go from there. Or if I want to just make a theme deck that says, hey, I want a deck that's based around water and fire, I'll just start dumping a bunch of randos into a deck and say, water, fire deck, who, steam deck, and just call it and go with that. So it's, and due to the fact that they make you have 50 cards, it alleviates a bit of the analysis paralysis that would come in making a deck of cards. So this game is just freaking awesome, and it offers you a number of different strategies if you want to play in a different manner. So you're not even necessarily limited to how you play. And there's only 450 cards, I think, in the game. But while that's not a ton, like some Yu-Gi-Oh games have like 1,000, but by that same token, a lot of cards in Yu-Gi-Oh are pretty useless because you know what the good cards are. You'll just toss the mediocre chunk in the trash. So ultimately, the majority of the cards in this game are useful, so it's parsed down, but you don't have a lot of fluff, so that's a good thing. So how about just making a good deck?
I also have to appreciate the fact that this is the third version of Coldcept we've got in America, and all three have not only been on different platforms, they've been on different companies' platforms, published by different people.
That is true, actually, because I don't remember who did the other ones, but I know none of them were NIS.
The first one on PS2 was by, I believe, NEC.
Wow.
And then on the 360, Xbox 360, was published by Bandai Namco. And now on Nintendo 3DS from NIS America.
That's what's up. That's basically companies that say this game is awesome and no one's talking about it this gen. Let it be us that bring it to the States.
I wish it would, like, make a repeat appearance on a platform.
Well, true, but at the same time, in my opinion, they made the best choice here. I know a lot of people like to hate on the portable consoles, but I'm sorry. The fact that it has online multiplayer and local multiplayer, I can take it wherever the heck I want, so I can play with people out in the street if I came across it. Yeah, I know, Pernell, good luck with that shit. But I know other people up there may be lucky. They might have friends that can bring out a 3DS and play with them, mm-hmm. You know? That ability to take it wherever you want and then play it multiplayer wherever you want with other people is, to me, the bee's knees. Like, I don't need a game like that to be on my TV. I just want to have it accessible to me whenever I want to play it.
And it's perfect.
So
I guess the big question is, $40, what is your verdict on this?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You should buy this game. You should support the product. Show that people want games that aren't necessarily shooters all the freaking time. Maybe this game sells well enough. Maybe I see a Dokapon Kingdom come over here again. That would be freaking swank. So buy this game because it's freaking awesome, and we might get Dokapon back.
Isn't Dokapon from Atlas though?
I'm not sure. I think they published it, but they didn't develop it. I think someone else developed it.
We've seen RPGs and the like Japanese developed titles jump from publisher to publisher so much lately that who knows?
It's just hard to tell. People were still complaining about Ys after what was it? I think NIS took it, but people were so used to XC doing all their games that people were like, I don't understand this translation. It's weird and foreign to me. Like, it's words. And it's on a screen. Just enjoy the ride. But people are real touchy about that stuff.
So one more question about Coldcept. We covered that it's a buy it at $40. What about the limited edition for $60, which as of the time we are recording this Monday night, it is still available on Amazon.
That's a rare thing, actually. Usually that stuff would be long sold out by now. But
I know. It is $60. It includes the game, obviously. A soundtrack CD, a hardcover art book, and a set of 7 foil cards, plus dice.
Honestly, I am still getting... That's the reason why I'm still buying it, because I had the collector's edition pre-ordered before we got the review copy in, and I honestly decided, you know, I just want the dice and those foil cards, because I like the idea of having actual Coldcept cards, and it makes me kind of sad that you can't just buy them at the store. But I bought it with those two things in mind. Soundtrack never was a big thing for me because they never give you a complete soundtrack on these things, so I don't know why to even bother to put them in there. Like, it's not the full thing. It's like one of the 12 tracks in the game I like is on this disc. And you don't release the full soundtrack to purchase. So you just gave me a freaking sampling. Why even bother? But the art book is good for the art, because I do like the art style in this game. I like the art on all the cards, and I wanted to ask, it's nice to actually have physical cards, even if it's only a whopping 9 when your deck consists of 50. That's another thing. It's like, why not just make a deck of 50 and give them to you? That would have been pretty nifty.
Cost? I mean, you're only paying an extra $20 for all that other stuff. So.
True, but let me be blunt. If they gave me a full deck of 50 cards, I'd pay another $10 on top of that.
Yeah, well, these are oversized foil cards. They're not just playing cards.
Yeah, I would have wanted oversized 50 cards.
Get your expectations in check, Purnell. Jesus Christ.
I can't. I want the world, and damn it, I'm going to get it.
All right, moving on. I'm going to give you a break. I'm going to handle one myself. The next game to talk about is called Lilith M, developed by Chess Star Studio, published in the U.S. by eHome Entertainment. Released September 27th on Xbox One for $9.99. Open a journey for you to seek hope. A girl named Lilith, a robot who has some mystery links to Lilith, a steampunk cyberspace, an unavoidable and difficult journey. Can you solve these puzzles for Lilith and control the robot to find the key to answer? It all depends on you. As you can tell, there's a little bit of English on this. This was a, I believe, Chinese-developed game that was, like, exclusive to Xbox Japan for quite a while, and it just released in America. And you could tell it just released because even now, again, Monday night, a couple of days after the game launched, all the achievements are still in Japanese or Chinese, whichever. I can't tell the difference. I guess I'm an asshole for that.
It adds a bit of mystery when you accomplish something. It's like, what did I do? Wow.
I think they're in Japanese because I don't know, just based on how things look, but I could be completely wrong.
It if is, you just it, say Moonspeak, it lets you off the hook.
It was hilarious, though, to like the first achievement I popped in the game was all in a different language than what I'm used to seeing. And it just like it had the number, and then like there were numbers in there because numbers, I guess, are universal. And then I was like, say, Xbox, open this for more information. I'm like, well, if I open it, it's not really going to give me more information because I can't read it anyway. The game itself, though, is really cool. Have you seen speedrun videos where it's like one guy using one controller to play two games?
I have heard of those, but I've never watched one. They just seem baffling to me.
It's somewhat similar in style to that, where you control a girl on the left side of the screen, and then you control a robot on the right side of the screen. They're owning their
own, like Cookie and Cream.
Yeah, they're both in their own self-contained little puzzle room, and you need to control the two of them at the same time. So if you move left, you're moving left with both of them. And if
wait, never mind. This isn't like Cookie and Cream. So this is you're manipulating them simultaneously with one controller.
Yes.
Oh, mercy.
Yes. Which is where the challenge comes in, because, you know, clearly if you were just to walk around a room and, you know, pick up the collectibles that you have to get to complete the stage, that's a bit too easy. So, of course, there's going to be like lasers and spike traps and pits and all this other stuff that you got to navigate through using either open areas to walk the other character around or walk them up against walls. Because if they're up against a wall, you could still move the other character in that direction. But the one character's on a wall, so they can't really move any further. So walls are pretty much your safe space in this game. You need to navigate the characters through. There's going to be collectible, like a little golden cog or a little golden coin, whatever the hell it is. One for each character to pick up, and you need to, you know, flip switches to open doors, pick up barrels to drop in front of, like, metallic fly-eating traps. So instead of eating you, the little girl, or the robot, they eat a barrel instead. It allows you to sneak by.
I just find that funny for reasons that make no sense to me.
I think it's a really, really cool game. There's clearly, like, some translation issues. It's rough around the edges, but the actual meat of the gameplay is really solid and really fun. Some of the puzzles are very tricky, going to take you a lot of tries to get through. There is a story there, but like when I first started the very first stage, there's story popping up while at the same time you could see a timer counting down, like the level is going.
Oh, while the story's happening?
Yeah.
Oh, that's an annoyance for sure.
Funny enough, when the time runs out, like nothing happens. You could run out of lives, you could run out of time, but you keep going. I think that's more of like a, instead of having a score, it's like a personal best of like, oh, I beat it with this many lives and with this much time left. Or just beat it.
Or so there was no like, because sometimes what those games will do, it might just say, you know, if you beat it within this scope, you'll get like, say, a medal on the stage. And if you get all the medals for a section of stages, you unlock like a bonus level set or something. I've seen games do that.
I haven't noticed anything with like earning medals or going back through this. Like, I haven't replayed any stages. I've just been trying to move forward. I guess I should go back and see if anything's different if you replay stages. But I've just been trying to progress through and get through the puzzles. And as far as I could tell, like, there's nothing different. Nothing special pops up when you beat the stage. It's just you beat the stage. When the next stage starts to load, it shows you like a personal best of like time and deaths. So I think that's just how it's keeping track of things.
Ah, okay.
It's possible that if you beat all the stages with still having lives and time, maybe it gives you something extra. I would normally turn to the achievements to get more information.
Of like, well, you know, not happening.
Beat all stages with like four lives remaining or something like that. No, because I can't read the achievements. I even tried using like Google Translate on the one stage to try and read them. And it's like, in customs death 10 times to get.
What? Good luck with that. What's that supposed to mean?
So I don't fucking know.
You just accept that when you get an achievement, you succeeded at a thing. And that's good.
Yeah.
But.
Like I said, the game is kind of rough around the edges. Sometimes you'll feel like you're moving a character, but the character doesn't seem to move when you expect it to. Like, you'll hold the direction, but either you're not holding the analog stick far enough, or you didn't, or it like takes a second to kick in. I'm not sure. There were one or two times where I would walk a character past a laser beam, because lasers will like turn on and off and you got to get past them. I would get past the laser beam, but apparently my character's hitbox was still just barely touching it, and it killed me, even though my actual character wasn't.
Weird.
So it's just like little weirdness like that. But, you know, it doesn't really detract from the fun too much, since there isn't a huge penalty that I noticed from losing all your supposed lives, because even with zero left, it still just reloads the stage and you play it. I guess the big drawback is when you die, clearly it starts the stage over. There is no D-pad controls in the game. I would love to see them add D-pad controls, especially in like puzzle games where everything is kind of like set in blocks. Even though there's analog control, everything is still just up, down, left, right.
Oh, you go from square to square, basically.
Yeah. And like even navigating the menus, everything uses the analog stick. I would love to see them add D-pad control to the game. I would love to see them add English achievements to the game. That would be very, very helpful for the American audience that it just released in. Overall, for $10, though, I got to give it a try. It's a really fun game. It's enjoyable. It's a little rough around the edges, a little bit sloppy, but it's fun. And I think that's more important than a little bit of sloppiness. That the game is fun and enjoyable.
And though you kind of, it may be pretty self-explanatory or pretty obvious, I still figure it's worth asking for people who are listening. But you mentioned earlier about the dialogue being a little, like, you know, janglish. But do you feel as though anything in the game outright requires you to read? Or is it just like you're playing the puzzles and dialogue or text is just rather negligible?
There's some tutorials to it. Like, oh, well, I should watch out for this plant because it might eat me. But it's just kind of common sense that there's a barrel nearby that it instructs you to pick up. Like, when you get next to it, it's like push button to pick up. And you're like, oh, well, that motherfucker's going to eat me. If I put the barrel there, oh, he eats the barrel instead. So I don't think the text is super, super important. It's there to read. it ties the game together, but it's, you know, if this game was, if I just imported this game from Japan, I would still be able to play through it without any issues.
Okay.
I still wouldn't be able to read the achievements, but
but you'll know you got them.
Yeah, it's pretty much a, you know, a puzzle game that you have to make it through the rooms. It's just the big twist is that you are controlling two characters in two separate rooms at the same time. And English text, Chinese text, Swedish text, it doesn't matter. It's just a universal style of game where you get the characters through the level, pick up the collectible, and move on to the next stage. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, rough around the edges, whatever else, it's only $10. It is still worth checking out, so I give it a try. It is good stuff.
Do like.
And speaking of foreign, English-y kind of games, next game to talk about is called Battle Gorega Rev 2016, I'm guessing Revision 2016, developed and published by M2 Corporation Limited. It released September 29th on Xbox One for $34.99, coming to PS4 as well. Last I checked, it didn't have any kind of firm date, but it is coming. The legendary arcade shoot-em-up from 1996 is back in this meticulously crafted release that's sure to please both devoted fans and a new generation of shmup maniacs. In addition to a perfect recreation of the original experience and all new game modes, BGM, and M2 gadgets to help you conquer the notorious difficulty. Reborn after 20 years, Battle Gorega will ignite the shmup passion in everyone from hardcore fans to beginners. Purnell, what did you think of this game?
Funny thing about this game I learned while looking into it. Apparently this game was originally designed by the people who eventually separated and then formed to become Cave. This game is the beginning of Cave. Those who don't know who Cave is or who Cave are, they are pretty much the masters of the shmup genre. Like, they are responsible for the vast majority of the best ones on the market, in my opinion. And this game, you can clearly see that the roots don't fall too far from the tree that grew from it. That didn't work the way it's supposed to work. Point is, it's awesome. So this game is a vertical scrolling shooter, which contains about 7 stages or so. And you can control, you can choose between 4 different ships, and each ship has its own type of special gun and sort of different, like regular gun, though they're fairly similar. It's just they kind of shoot. It's like they kind of look different bullet-wise, but in the end, I was just blowing shit up. I wasn't paying attention. I just know that their special weapon is unique. So as you fly around, you collect different power-ups in the game. And to be perfectly honest, as corny as it may sound, I never 100% got the grasp on what all the power-ups do. Like, I was just collecting random stuff and letting my gun get powered up, because one of the powers will increase the power of your gun. So once you get enough of them, you will get a power. Actually, wait, I do remember what they all do now. Okay, here we go. So, it just clicked. So, one of the power-up items, where as you collect more of them, you increase the power of your main gun. There's another power-up that will allow you to get an additional tiny ship on the side of your plane. And based on how you press the formation button, the ship will either be on your side, to your front, or to your back. And as you get more ships, you can kind of have like different bullet types spraying out in different directions to kind of cover your ass. Then there is also the point power-up item, and what happens there is an interesting concept. As you blow certain ships up, the power-up will appear, and you collect it. The next time you blow an enemy up that drops a power-up, it'll be the next level above that and worth more points. And it keeps progressing as you consecutively collect the power-ups. But the moment you miss one, it downgrades, and you're back to base 1 power-up type. So you're taking a lot of risky ventures to make sure you catch power-ups as you see them falling down the screen, because you don't want to get your point, you know, counter reset. And when it comes to shmups, you know it's all about getting that high score. So, now, this game in general is stupid, stupid difficult. Like, I got to stage 4. You unlock continues as you play, but even with the continues I unlocked, I didn't get past stage 5, which was the cloud stage. But I was still proud of even getting that freaking far as it stands. Because even though it is based off of an arcade machine and you do have to push a button and insert coins to get credits, the game limits how many credits you can put in. So you can't just go in and play the game and expect to just, you know, steamroll through it. there may be an option in the ridiculous options thing, which I'll get to in a minute, that may allow you to do that. But at the base, which is how I usually play my games, that is not an option. So unlock those continues if you keep dying, and hopefully eventually, in Ikaruga style, you'll just kind of battle of attrition your way through the game.
Man, so, why you got to name drop Ikaruga when you could name drop like Death Smiles or Guange or Dodonpachi? You know,
if
like
I remember correctly, though, the reason why I don't think you have to unlock continues in Death Smiles, you can just play through the game. Like you die and come back until you're done if you want.
I'm just saying, like these games are cave games, and these.
The only reason I name dropped Ikaruga was specifically because of that one mechanic. Because those other games don't have it. They don't have this, you know, limited continues angle. You can just play them indefinitely if I remember correctly. If I'm wrong, let me know, guys. I haven't played Death Smiles in a long time. But I do love Death Smiles, though. Mm-hmm. But that is one that makes this game pretty tough. Now, the options in this game are where I think the majority of the value in this game comes in. Because aside from the soundtrack polish being absurdly good, and it has options for like the original arcade style music and remix style music, there is it's like the equivalent of like a dip switch menu. You can adjust the level of hit, the amount of hit points the bosses have in stages. There are like, you know how a cabinet might have panels off to the side that'll show different things like your score or, you know, I don't know, just your status screen, I'll call it. The status panel off to the side of a shooting screen.
Mm-hmm.
In this game, you configure that. You can say what you want to be on display. Like you have like the next item is going to show up on the screen if you keep collecting them. It shows the level of rapid fire, how many bullets you can have on the screen at one time. It has a number of lives you have left, the amount of special weapons you've got left, the button configuration on your controller, the score across every stage you've completed in the game, if you want to keep track of, you know, how well you're doing on a score challenge. You know, it has another thing which I don't quite understand, because that's like, I would call it like an advanced mode sort of feature, but it has for something called formation info, and it displays all four different types of formations and then power-ups associated with those formations, which I'm guessing refer to, which I guess is like hidden formation you can unlock. I only know that exists because there's an option that mentions it in the settings menu, but there's like hidden formations you can unlock. I never freaking unlocked. So nuts and gum to that. But there's also an other settings section, which I thought was really cool because I didn't realize it until I had played it for like a good 2 days. But there's an additional set of options in the options that allow you to tweak things like, well, before I go on to that, I should actually explain this thing. Originally, I had a big complaint about the game, which is that bullets are like, later cave games, bullets are pretty flashy. Like they're large, they're circular, they're colorful, they flash. So if you get hit by a bullet, it's because you couldn't dodge it, but you saw it coming. In this game, though, bullets are typically narrow, they're thin, they're small, and it is very easy to have a bullet just knock you out without realizing it was coming, because it quite frankly blends in with the scenery. But thankfully, when I found out about this menu, one of the cool things you can change is you can change the style of bullets. Like, there's no, you know, big circular bullets, mind you, but you can change them to, like, different colored bullets. You can change them to different colored flashing bullets. So if you think like, you'll be more responsive to, like, flashing pink bullets, now all the bullets are flashing and they're pink, so they at least stand out a little bit more. Easier to tell between their bullets and your bullets. But there's also a switch for hidden characters, which I guess maybe in the arcade you had to put in a code to unlock them. I don't know. But in this game, if you switch this to on, there's four anime-inspired characters, whereas before there were just four model ships. But now you have four anime characters, which have different types of specials, more along the lines of something you see in, what's that game from Seek Psycho? It's like Gunblade or Gun... I don't remember what it's called, but yeah, it has a freaking wizard girl in it. But anyway, the point is, it's anime characters with like special like character-styled bombs and stuff like that. It's a little more, and they have like voices and characterization, so it's a little bit more cartoony in that regard. So if you want that sort of thing to go on, you can adjust the attract mode sounds. You know, if you want to actually have like, you know, coins, when you put the coin in, bloop, 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 you know, or all that stuff, you can turn that sound up and down or whatever. It's ridiculous. There's just, again, a lot of options in this thing. And it is, if you're the type of person that likes to customize your experience and you like shmups, they gave you the business. You can decrease the size of your hitbox on your ship.
Nice.
So if you want to have it so only the center of your ship takes damage and not the entire ship, you can do that. It's crazy.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I can sit here and go through all the menu options, but we'll be here for about 20 minutes. But like, they legitimately give you a ton of options, and it's just, it's really nice of them to do.
That's really, really cool.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm trying to think if there's, I guess it might be better for you to ask, like, is there anything about the shooter in particular that you'd be curious about? That when you think about shooters, you're like, hey, Pernell, what about that thing?
I don't really have too many questions. My big question is, I know a lot of people, they see the price of Japanese shmups, and that, like, they'll look at this one and be like, $35, what the fuck, that's insane, why would I pay this much for a 31-year-old game? Or is it? No, 21-year-old game. I don't know, whatever. Math. I can't math right now. Like, you and I, we understand the fact that these Japanese games, 90% of them don't make it to America.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a shame, because, you know, we mentioned Cave. So many amazing Cave shooters never made it to America, although there are a bunch of region-free ones that you could probably import and play. And the ones that do make it over seem to have a higher cost. Like, Raiden 5, it launched on the Xbox at, I think, $50, $40, $50. What the fuck was it? Shit, the one on PS4.
Are you talking about the Darius Chronicles?
Yes, Darius Chronicles. That one launched at $60 on PS4. This one is launching at $35, where when you think about it, it's actually a cheaper shmup releasing in America. And I'm curious to know, for the casual consumer, will they see the value in this game? Or is it just going to be people like us that understand and appreciate these releases that are going to see $35 and be like, you know what, that's not a bad price?
I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I think it's the people like us. And the reason why I say that is because today's gaming environment has changed dramatically from the way it used to be. Back in the day, you'd get a game, and while we did have RPGs and adventure games like the Fax Handies and stuff, the majority of games were meant to be challenged over and over again with the intent of doing a little bit better the next time. Either get a higher score or beat the game using less lives or any number of different things. Next time I'm going to beat it on the higher difficulty and see how I do. Also, we were more inclined to not having the what I like to call the disposable economy system, which is you get a game, you steamroll it in a week just in time for the next big release. People don't want to sit down and actually, you know, engage in a game anymore and just kind of take it in for what it is. However, if I am wrong about you, the listener, as I make that statement, this game would be awesome for you, because this game is 100% designed to be played over and over again. Either it's to get through the game in one go, which you will not do unless you're a freaking like narcoleptic shooter maniac. You're likely going to die a lot and have to unlock continues to eventually get to the end of the game. That's going to take time. Then you're going to try to do it with higher scores. Then you're going to do it with other ships. Then you're going to do it with some of the anime ships. Then you're going to do it in the Rev 16 mode. Then you're going to do it in the arcade mode. Then you're going to play with the dip switch settings. There's a lot of options here, and there's a lot that you can do to tweak the gameplay experience to your liking. But it is meant to be played and experienced over and over again. It's not an easy game. Like, again, to bring up an old classic, you know, I'll say Death Smiles or Ikaruga, because I guess they both technically count in this regard. Each game had a very small number of stages. We're talking maybe, by today's standards, I'll say, like 5 or 6 stages. But those stages were meaty with content as far as a challenge and just, you know, tactics that can be employed to do make a better and better run each time you attempt the stage. That's what this game is. It is going to challenge you. It's going to push you, but you're going to hopefully enjoy it and keep coming back for more and eventually become the top dog on the leaderboard. Gotcha. If you can handle that and that sounds appealing to you, this game is worth every penny. I actually asked a few of my friends who are big into shmups, like way bigger than I could ever be. I mentioned this by name because before you referred it to me, I'd never heard of this game. And every last one of them said, holy crap, that's coming out. Oh, yeah, man, I used to play it a lot back then. That's worth every penny.
I don't think it ever released in America before. I think that's part of it.
Yeah, but they know that there's people that import, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the imports, like I played it, you know, import version of it. I played at a friend's place who does all the crazy import machines and games. But they were all familiar with it, and they had all played it. And they were, like, geeked about it.
So yeah, I'm looking up. It originally released in arcades in 96, in Japan on the Saturn in 98, and then Japan on the PS4 in 2016, hence the revision 2016. So yeah, this is not only the first time in America, first time on Xbox, which is really cool. And it's just cool to finally see a game like this make it to America. And then I guess my other real question for you is, this more along the lines of like a standard vertical shooter, just a standard shmup, or is this like full on bullet hell with half the screen being in, you know, hidden by bullets?
I think it's more of the standard, because later some of the bosses will get you like a nice spray of bullets for the most part. But I think in this game, the normal stage, from what I experienced, is mostly just like stealth bullets, like I would almost want to say, because you're not getting like, you're not getting splattered with bullets, but you do get a large, you get a decent coating of them, and they're small.
Nice.
They blend in very well. So you're going to be dodging physical enemies, you're going to be dodging stealth bullets, and then when you get to the bosses, you're going to get the rain of bullets like you're used to.
Sounds good. Well, final verdict then, $35. What is your call on this?
Enthusiasts, definite buy. You know, dabblers, tries. Wusses who can't handle a challenge, don't even attempt it.
I wouldn't even, like, mention them. I'd be like, pussies who can't handle this shit, just go away. You don't want none.
You don't want none of this. You don't want none of this shit, Dewey. You don't want none of this.
Dewey? Who's Dewey?
This is from, as a reference I pulled out of my ass, it's from Walk the Line.
Walk the Line. You don't want none of this shit, Dewey.
I heard it was habit forming. It's the least habit forming drug there is.
I gotta watch that again sometime. It's been a while.
It's such a good movie. I heard people die from it. No one has ever died from this drug, Dewey. You don't want none of this shit, Dewey.
Oh, man. On that note, Purnell, thank you so much for covering these games with me. And I know you'll be back on again soon. Do you have any final words to wrap it up?
A moment of silence for our beloved Rick and Morty. That was quick.
All right, next up, we have a handful of Switch games to talk about, and we are bringing in our good friend Tim Ekibis. Tim, how are you doing today, sir?
Good, great, spectacular.
How's your weekend?
Oh, it's been a good weekend, I think. It's hard to remember. It just kind of flies by and like is a blur as I'm trying to get as much done as possible and like hanging out with my kid and like trying to play games. So it's like by Monday morning, people are like, how was your weekend? And I'm like, it was good. They're like, what'd you do? I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I don't feel hurt thinking about it, so I'm guessing it was good.
I'm not having NOM flashbacks, so
yeah,
things couldn't have been too bad.
Yeah.
On the bright side, you got to play some Switch games this weekend, huh?
Fuck yeah, man. Like, last Thursday was a heck of a day for new Switch games on the Switch eShop. Like, 15 games came out.
That was ridiculous.
All at once.
We're doing our best to cover a bunch of them, and you're here to talk about two. I'm going to talk about one myself, but we're going to kick things off with the game Butcher, developed by Transhuman Design, published by Crunching Koalas. It released September 28th on the Switch for $9.99. Butcher is a fast-paced 2D shooter and a blood-soaked love letter to the cult classics of the genre. If kicking corpses into a lava pit and adorning walls with blood is your idea of a good time, Butcher is the game for you. Tim, what'd you think of Butcher?
I really liked Butcher. I hadn't heard of Butcher before this. It came out on PC like last year, and it's out on PS4.
Xbox as well. I know we covered it on Xbox when that version launched.
I hadn't heard of it at all. And like watching the trailer, like the trailer is like so obnoxious because it's just like murder, kill, fuck, destroy, kill humans, murder, genocide, blah. That doesn't really come across, like that attitude doesn't come across in the game other than when you pause, it says real men don't pause. And I'm like, fuck you. I am a father. I pause a lot as needed to be clear. I don't need your shit, game. Fucking A.
Don't you sass me.
Don't sass me.
Game.
But yeah, it's like the first thing on the blurb said something like the easiest mode is hard. That's a lie. There's an easy mode that where they make it really easy. But anyway, so I don't know. Playing it on hard.
And you're just calling them out on their shit.
It's just like, come on, get out of your own ass, dude. Like, you're a little too far up there. Like, calm down. Your game's cool. Don't be a jackass about it. But playing through on hard, you know, there is no normal difficulty, so I would consider hard, quote unquote, to be normal. It wasn't that bad. You know, a playthrough on this game, it's a game that's meant to be replayed, I think. Like, one playthrough is going to take you somewhere between an hour and 2 hours, probably, depending on your level of skill.
Mm-hmm.
It is a twin-stick shooter, except it's also a 2D platformer. So you have to control your guy jumping and moving around this environment, but you're still aiming and shooting like with the twin stick. So, you know, left is your movement, right is your aiming, and you got to jump on the trigger, and you have your shoot button on the other trigger along with your weapon toggles. So yeah, as I was playing through this game, I'm like, man, this kind of has like a flow that reminds me a lot of Doom, and that you're just, at least what I've played of Doom, which was the Doom from last year, where you're moving through these environments very, very quickly and having to identify targets and pick up ammo and stuff on the run. And your movement really matters, your agility, your being able to turn and shoot guys in midair. I was like, this feels really Doomish. And then I was like, oh, this game's totally inspired by Doom, like by the developer's own admission. Like, that's something they were going for, is to have a game that kind of felt like Doom. And they succeeded. But you have, there's like 20 levels, I think, 20, 25 levels, something like that. There's like four or five worlds with four levels apiece. And you know, a level might take you like a minute to get through if it goes really well, if you're really on your game for your aiming and your dodging and your jumping and you're avoiding the traps and whatever. Or, you know, you might get fucked and it'll take you like 5-10 minutes to get through. You might just have a really hard time with it, or it'll be a bit of a lengthier level and there'll be something to trip you up at the end. Cause there is traps, there's rooms where it'll lock you in and then you just have to kill a bunch of guys to get out. There is a little bit of platforming, light puzzle solving. Throughout all the levels, there's these skulls that are hidden. So that's a fun little replay incentive, is to try to figure out how to get the skulls. And something that I appreciate is you can generally see them from the main play field. It's just a matter of how to get to them, because there will be hidden passages or a switch you might hit later in the level will then uncover that skull. So you might have to go a little bit out of your way later on.
So they're like hidden in plain sight.
They are hidden in plain sight. You'll see the room with the skull in it, and you'll just be like, well, it appears to all be walls around it. How do I get there? You get different weapons. You get like a shotgun, assault rifle, flamethrower. The flamethrower is really fun, really satisfying. It just spews fire all over the place. You get a grenade launcher, you get a railgun, all fun stuff. It's got like a really nice, like, your character is really small. Like, so you see more of the, kind of the stage than having like these big characters, but all the enemy characters are pretty small as well. So it wants you to be able to see where you're going around the environments. But it's a pixel art style, again, very evocative of kind of a dark, depressing, doomish world. And the music fits that as well. And it's really fun, really addicting. And I think this is its first portable appearance, I believe. I was looking on the PSN store, and that is not a PS Vita compatible game.
Ooh. So there you go.
So there's no Switch tax on this as well.
That's because it's digital only.
Yeah. But I think that it makes for a great portable game, because you could just bomb through like, that's what I was doing. I was basically picking up my Switch over the course of the past few days, bombing through a level or three, and then putting it back down, and then picking it back up, and just kind of squeezing in a level here and there. And it's really good. Looks good on the Switch. You know, controls well. I really liked it.
Cool. So for $10, what is your verdict?
I say buy it. Nice. To buy it right there. $10 is it might be a short first playthrough, though. I don't feel like 2 hours is an abysmal value proposition for $10. But you're probably gonna replay this game either just to get better time or play through on harder difficulties,
or to get the skulls. Yeah. Sounds good. Well, I am excited to hear that you really enjoyed a game for once. Yay!
Hey, come on. I really liked Half Genie Hero. That was one of the two. So, come on.
Anyway, next game to talk about is called Arcade Archives Mario Brothers, developed and published by Hamster Corporation. It released September 28th on the Switch for $7.99. Mario Brothers is an action game released by Nintendo in 1983. Good Lord. I was two. It's the first game that used Mario in the title. Control Mario or Luigi in order to punch the enemies coming out of pipes from below, turn them over and defeat them. The origin of the Mario series. Will you work together or against each other? If you, for some reason, don't know what the original Mario Brothers is, this is not Super Mario Brothers. It is not a level-based platformer. Basically, there are a series of pipes that monsters come out of. You have to jump below them and hit the ground to flip them over and then kick them to beat them. Clear a stage of the enemies, move on to the next stage. Every now and then you'll see coins come along that give you some points. There's a POW block in the middle of the screen near the bottom where if you're getting overwhelmed, you could hit that and any of the enemies that are on the ground at the time, which is important because there's jumping enemies. Any of the enemies on the ground at the time get flipped over and you could knock them out. It only has a certain number of uses, so you got to make sure you don't just punch them like crazy and waste all your POW blocks in the first level like many people tend to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that was me like playing on that is the mini game on Mario 3. That's kind of how I first experienced Mario Brothers.
Is it?
Yeah.
I know a lot of people are probably going to see this game on the store and be like, what, Mario Brothers again? The important thing to note is that this is the original arcade release. This is not the NES version. This is not the Atari version. Yeah. Like, it looks better than every other version you've seen. It plays better than everything you've seen. It has different animations, more complex animations, a lot more going on the screen at one time in later stages. While the gameplay is pretty much the same, depending on whichever version you get, I think for $8, this game is just such a cool piece of history. And considering in what, 34 years it's been since this came out, this is the only time ever that the arcade version of this game is available on a home console.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very excited. When they first announced the Nintendo Arcade series, I was super excited about it. I know everybody on the planet is excited for Punch-Out, and they wanted that one first. But you got to think, if they did Punch-Out first, no one would care about the rest.
I guess. I don't know. I'm excited for Balloon Fight as well. It's just like the whole thing. Just like, yeah, the historical value of being able to like finally have those games on a modern platform is... cannot be understated.
Yeah,
and $8 is not a bad price at all.
You know, we went on about the value of the Neo Geo games, because a lot of people see the Neo Geo ACA releases and they're like, oh, $8 for a 20, 30-year-old game, who's going to waste that? When you look at the prices of those games still today, if you were to buy an actual Neo Geo cartridge,
mm-hmm.
Jesus, $8 is a fucking bargain.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like when they had like some SNK classic collections on PS2 and it was like $15 or $20 for 10 of those fucking games. It's like, what is this? This is insane. I feel like I'm robbing someone.
I know. So $8 a piece for these arcade games, you know, depending on the game, as long as it's a solid game, $8 is an easy price to swallow given the rarity of some of these games. Like even trying to find an actual arcade machine of Mario Brothers is going to be a tough thing to do in this day and age. And for $8, I definitely gotta recommend that people pick it up just to show that if these sell well, we might continue to see more Nintendo arcade games release. And
this
that's
is two
not-
player, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I imagine you could just break off the Joy-Cons and play it that way because, like, what controls for that game are movement and a button.
Yeah. Just left, right, and then jump.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's it. So
that's fun. That's a good portable multiplayer game right there.
Yeah. Compared to most of the other Nintendo arcade games, it's definitely not the most advanced or the most long lasting. But from a historical perspective, I can't say anything but to buy this because you may never have another chance to see a game released like this in this format. Mm-hmm. So I gotta say buy it. $8 and then keep an eye out for more games in the series. I'm excited to see what else comes along.
Heck yeah.
And then the other game you're here to talk about is called Sparkle 2. Developed and published by our friends at 10 Tons Limited. It released September 28th again on the Switch for $7.99. Challenge the darkness with your swift orb matching skills, mighty magical enchantments, and earth-shaking power-ups. Match the orbs before they fall into the abyss and find your way through the mysterious lands of startling beauty. Tim, what did you think of Sparkle 2?
Sparkle 2. Well, I didn't play Sparkle 1, so I guess I'm a little behind the eight ball on this one. But it's a match 3 puzzle game, bust a move type deal here, in that you have these kind of trains of colored orbs that snake along this path on the screen, and you have your launcher, which you need to aim and fire the balls, trying to match 3 or more and clear them out. And once you hit, it seems a certain number of points, you clear the stage. This game, you can use either controls or you can play touchscreen on your Switch. This is the first time I have touched my Switch screen, I think, to actually use that feature on a game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know, because Nintendo's own Picross, which came out this past week, doesn't have fucking touch controls for some goddamn reason.
Oh, my Lord. That's stupid.
So this game has some really nice production values for kind of such a simple concept. Like, it has this whole fantasy trope in that you're traveling across the land, but it adds a nice bit of, you know, kind of extra whimsy to the game, I guess. It has, like, really nice music. It's really pleasant and relaxing. Like, the music's all really good. When you're playing the stages, like, the orbs, the marbles that you're shooting around are all very nicely rendered and animated and make nice, satisfying, like, pool ball clinky sounds when they hit each other, which is nice and relaxing. It's my only, like, hold up with this game is I'm sitting there playing, and I'm like, man, this feels like something I would, like, play on my phone. And it's already out on phones. So, it's the same price. It's $8 on phones. It's $8 on the Switch. So
I'm pretty sure it's $8 on PlayStation and Xbox as well.
Yeah, but why? I mean, I think, who wants to play this with a controller on a TV? I mean, I guess you could if you wanted to. It's fine.
I enjoyed it playing it on console.
that's fine. It just seems like portable, you know, pull
that's
out.
Why when you said there's touchscreen controls, like, I'm legitimately excited. That might be worth double dipping on for touchscreen control in a game like this, because I'm used to just using the analog stick and then hitting the button to shoot the ball.
I definitely felt like the touchscreen was a lot better. Like, I tried it. Initially I was playing with just the analog controls, but then I was like, I wonder if this works. And I touched it, and it worked, and I just couldn't go back. you can switch, which you can see, like, the next three, you can see the ball you have on deck, and then there's, like, two balls behind that, and you can switch the first two. And so you can do that just by tapping the trigger, so that seemed to work fine, because that's where I was holding the Switch. It's just kind of a matter, if you're going to spend $8 on this game, maybe you'd get it on your phone first, but it's maybe you'd prefer to have it on the Switch so you could play, you know, with either way you want, or put it on the screen, or play it, you know, portably. It's not something you're just going to be able to pull out of your pocket because your Switch doesn't fit in your pocket. It's a good, fun, solid puzzle game overall.
Yeah, I know me personally, if I were to spend $8 on this, I would have a better time purchasing it on the Switch than I would on my phone.
I mean, it is a bigger, better looking screen for sure. And your fingers definitely aren't as cramped on it, I would think, than playing it than it would on the phone.
Nice. And I'm even tempted to, like I said, I'm tempted to double dip on the Switch just because of the touchscreen gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
So, for $8, what is your verdict on it?
My verdict is, fuck it. Why not? I mean, it's if you're looking for a solid puzzle game, fuck it. Why not? $8. That's totally fair.
Sounds good. All right. Well, Tim, thank you so much for talking Switch once again. And do you have any final words to sum it all up?
Switch games.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Get Over Here, developed by Reload Game Studio, published by Cubite Interactive. Released September 12th on PS4 for $5.99. Get Over Here puts you in the shoes of a reality show contestant. This reality show is a bloody competition where you got to pull your enemies using your hook gun and finish them with your special move. If you're skillful enough to survive the tournament, beat all your enemies, and dodge all the traps, you will be crowned the winner. Aim, pull, and finish them. Got our friend Chris Taylor covering this one. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing Mortal Kombat-tastic.
So what is Get Over Here?
Get Over Here. Okay, so I've been to a few social gatherings where somebody will have the network able like machines of the past 10 years like up, you know, your 360 and PS4 and Xbox One. And invariably it'll be like, well, I've got more than three people here. We're going to play a quick multiplayer game. And that's something like, you know, Lethal League or Rogue Force, you know, cool stuff like that. So that when I didn't even have to load this game, I just looked at the logo and I was like, oh, this is one of those games. This is specifically a game that you buy when you've got people coming over and you want to play a goofy thing that has no learning curve and no real, you know, there's no real progression to it. It's just, it's basically a mini game, but as a full game. So that's kind of what we're dealing with Get Over Here. So what it is that it basically, you've got your four people or your however many less than four people plus the rest of the players as a computer. And you start on four corners of a particular stage. Three variables are selected randomly, like kind of slot machine style. So, you know, like you have your Smash Bros, first person to, you know, get 5 points wins, or in this one, it's like that, so, but it's selected randomly, so you don't really get the input there. But it's things like, yeah, first person to win this many points, first person to have a ratio of this many points. That is to say, get like, you know, 5 points, but every time they die, they lose a point, you know?
Mm.
So that can keep games going. And then sometimes there's a time limit. It's like you're nothing really surprising there, just kind of general fare. And then there's items, which the game has actually quite a few items. I'd say probably, I got to look at the screen once because it drew one variable where I was able to pick what items would be on the field. And when it showed me the list, it looked like it was somewhere around 20. So it's 20 different little things that are kind of cool that get in there. My favorite item, actually, that they drop sometimes is the awesome sword, or the awesome sword of badassery, because I don't know what it does. I've never been able to successfully use it. Like, it doesn't really say what it does, but what it does do is that the title of the awesome sword of badassery, it keeps going in this sentence that's so long that you can't read it, and like that's what the text is. It's like awesome sword of badassery with a name that's so long that you'll never be able to read it in time, and everybody will get really annoyed, but it slices potatoes or something. I literally couldn't read it, but it fills up the screen with text for like a second.
Oh,
and I thought that was pretty clever, yeah. And yeah, so then the point becomes that you're it's top-down view, and you walk around with your character. It's very simple controls. It's one, you know, you move around, one button sends out a hook. If you hook one of the other characters on the field, they become dizzy, and then you can push the right trigger button, the R2 trigger button, and use your move on them. And it's there's no difference between the moves. They're just different per character. And you don't have to hook the character in order to use your finishing move, but if you get into a position where you just run up to them and use your finishing move, they'll be able to use their finishing move on you at the same time. So then, you know, the only way to get away with it is to make sure that they're dizzy or a very bad player. And, yeah, you just basically do that until the parameters are met. And, the game has a couple of modes. One is tournament mode, which just is best of four rounds. They pick a winner, based on that, and the other one is just a quick match, just a single round. And actually, I believe that that's the entire game.
Not bad. Like no, I mean, it's a $6 game, so.
Yeah, actually, I saw it was $10 on Steam, so I was like, oh, is this a $10 game? That's weird. But as a $6 game, it was understandable. There's no story mode. I don't think there are any trophies. I didn't see any.
There should be. I don't think PlayStation games are allowed to not have trophies.
Well, I certainly didn't earn one, I'll tell you that much. I don't really know where to look on that. And PS4 still eludes me a little bit. It's got like the worst. It's got the worst looking store ever.
Yeah, it really does.
I like the games on it, but come on, Sony. Like, Nintendo stores are so well put together that I cannot help but buy things. But, like, PlayStation stores, like, if I don't know exactly what I want. But that's a whole different complaint. Okay, so...
Here we go. I found some of the trophies. Get a double kill, triple kill, killing spree, score the first kill in a match, reach godlike status, reach unstoppable status. Oh, you could have gotten one for taunting.
I did all those things. I guess I just didn't notice that they gave me trophies.
Maybe.
Weird.
Grab the awesome sword.
Yeah, I did grab the awesome sword. okay, so there's some trophies to be had. But definitely, like, no story mode and, you know, anything like that. And I noticed, too, in the options, there are the choices between two languages, English and Brazilian. Well, Portuguese, I suppose, the official language of Brazil. But it just shows you an American flag or a Brazilian flag. There's good things and bad things about, like, the actual characters in the game, which is basically where all the personality comes from. I was really impressed with some of the characters. You got, like, a robot, and you got, like, an executioner guy who, between rounds, just sits on a couch and drinks. He looks like he hates his job. You got a wizard, which is kind of nice because he turns everybody into chicken. Like, not a chicken, just chicken. Like, you know, a plucked and rotisserie roasted chicken.
Yeah.
And then probably my favorite one, it's actually a pair. One is a kid wearing a chicken suit, like you'd see in, you know, TV shows or cartoons where somebody has to, like, wear it to advertise a fried chicken place or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these things that don't exist in real life, but we always were aware of them because... for whatever reason, they get put into TV shows. And so there's this kid in a chicken suit, but there's also a chicken in a kid suit. It's a chicken walking around in a badly made, like, human-looking costume.
Nice.
There's one character that kind of bothered me because it looked like a stereotype American Indian. But I did some research, and I was like, well, this game was made by Brazilians, and they kind of have a different thing with their indigenous people, so... if you're offended by stereotypical Indians, you probably shouldn't go for this one. So that was the only notch I knocked off as far as that goes.
Well, then overall for $6, what is your verdict on this one?
If you got people coming over and you're bored with all the other multiplayer party games, then sure, go ahead and give it a shot. I mean, it was all right in one player mode, but I did everything there is to do in the game in about 45 minutes. So... might not be the best game for loners.
All right. Sounds good. Well, Chris, thanks as always for coming on and covering a game for us, and I'm sure you'll be back on again soon.
All right. Thanks.
And finally tonight, we're bringing on our good friend Cole Martin to join the show. Cole, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
You know, it's one of those days.
It's one of those where you wake up and then you do things and then you go to bed.
Indeed.
That's the day.
But you're here to talk about a handful of games, and we're going to kick things off with Raiders of the Broken Planet, developed and published by Mercury Steam at release September 22nd on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam as technically a free-to-play, as it has a free-to-play prologue with it. There's also an Alien Myths Mission Pack available for $9.99 and a Founders Pack with a Season Pass for $39.99 that includes access to all four of the upcoming campaigns. Raiders of the Broken Planet is a novel 4v1 adventure where you experience both sides of the story, team up with other raiders, or change sides and foil their missions, fighting as the antagonist with the enemy at your side. As a raider, you will compete with your teammates for valuable rewards. As the antagonist, you are judged by Uras Beharit, I think, a dark space demon. Cole, tell me about the demon. Okay, tell me about the game then.
I didn't understand the whole demon thing. I did very poorly at that part of the game. And so I was hoping to just sneak in the detail of it, and you want to lead off with it.
Well, tell me about the game. What is Raiders of the Broken Planet?
Raiders of the Broken Planet is a science fiction shooter. It's third person. If you play the prologue first, which is free, it contains two chapters, and it tells the story of Herrick and his team of raiders who are trying to free another mercenary, I guess is a good way to put it, from enemy hands and add him to the team of raiders. But he's not exactly not really the kind of guy you want around. It's really hard to believe he's considered one of the protagonists once you do finally meet him. The prologue contains two chapters. Then Alien Myths is out. It contains another four. Like you said, there's a season pass and there is more episodes to come. Each episode is broken into four chapters and contains at least 4 hours worth of content.
Oh, nice.
In addition to the Alien Myths that we currently have in the prologue, which are the first six chapters, you can expect at least four more chapters from three more episodes to come. So it is a lot of content that is in store for this game.
Sounds good.
Like I said, it is a tactical three-person shooter. It does have stealth and melee elements. What's a good way to put this? As you go through the story, you don't have to, you know, just approach every aspect of the mission in a run-and-gun manner. You have limited ammunition, and you need to be mindful of that. And the only way to get more ammo, there's not like loot boxes around with ammo or anything. The only way to acquire more ammo is to take on enemies in hand-to-hand combat. And so when you take them on hand-to-hand, you can loot some ammo off of them, and then you'll have more. But if you shoot an enemy, you don't get the privilege of taking their ammo from them. It's just what you have is what you fought for. In addition to managing your ammunition, you must also keep up with your character's stress and obviously health. But the stress level is one of the major components that is special to raiders, because if the stress level is increased too much, you become visible to the enemies. Your stress affects your ability to be stealthy. And While it's also managed by like how you approach the combat, it's also specific to each of the game's six characters. So some of them are more calm and cool-headed and collected, like Herrick, who is who you begin the prologue with. He's a sniper type character. He's very zen, collected, just very chilled out, and he can almost stay completely invisible to enemies throughout the game. even when you get into combat situations with him, his stress dips very quickly. There are other characters, though, such as Alicia, who has a history as a gangbanger, and she's kind of a hothead, and she's also very addicted to the substance that is used in the game to keep stress low, which I believe, if I can pronounce it properly, is Alphic. it's a substance used to... It's basically the game's equivalent of a narcotic addiction. Her use of Alphic, she's so hopped up on it that her stress is just constantly at a high. And so even though it's impossible to keep her from being spotted, she has other advantages to play off of, whereas she's a little better at hand-to-hand, and she has the ability to get to certain areas of the maps that the other players cannot. So it balances out, even though some characters are more visible, they get other types of abilities to kind of balance out. It's surprisingly well suited for how the game wants to set everything up, that you know consciously you're supposed to be monitoring those stress levels, and yet when I liked playing as Alicia because I didn't have to be like, oh, I'm going to be seen, I'm a sniper, I'm going to get picked off. I was just able to just bust her through and be like, okay, I'm going to hit you and you and you. And then before I know it, I'm going to walk out of here and just be like, fuck all y'all, I did it. So you pick your favorite characters and who suits your playstyle very quickly. The universe that Raiders is set in is actually really expansive. There's a lot of explanation that needs to happen, though. Like, I'd like to see more explaining of the backstory and how everybody got to where they are. You get little tidbits, but I was just kind of left like, why are all these guys throwing in everything together? And I'm assuming it's because of the episodic nature that we can expect more of this to come forth in later episodes. But I just would have liked a little more explanation of everybody's purpose. And you can tell this is, it's almost kind of a Guardians of the Galaxy type relationship where they're all thrown together, but you can tell they really kind of don't want to be there. And I just want to know more, like, why are you there anyway then? So I'm looking forward to future chapters just to get to find out everybody's stories. The Alphic is managed. It's not just for managing stress. It's necessary for your characters to respawn as well. And so there's a limited supply of it available. And if you're playing as a team, that becomes evident in the respawn system. You can only respawn 16 times as a group, which sounds like a lot. Oh, you're not going to die 16 times in an hour campaign, are you? Yes. Between the four of you, you very well might. There's always that one weak link who's going to die 17 times. It's probably me.
No, it would be me.
So it does... not only is it like a limit to how many times your characters can respawn into the game, but the more that you die, the longer it takes for that that Alphic to become available and to allow for the respawn. So if you're dying frequently, you're leaving your teammates to have to pick up your slack because you are literally not allowed to spawn in yet. Which can really piss off the people you're playing with.
Did you piss a lot of people off?
I pissed people off. I'm very notorious for my just run in, blast away everything, and walk out gameplay style. That's just how I play shooters. It's not the best idea, but I get through them. And I can't help myself. It's just like, I'm like, I see an enemy, I'm going to go punch him in the head. And then I die, and then I have to wait to respawn, and everybody has to pick up my slack, and they get mad.
Nice. So I guess the important questions, there's a couple of them. The free-to-play prologue, given it's free, is it worth grabbing?
Yeah, it's a fuck it, why not? It really is. I was really impressed with, like I said, the amount of lore that's here. You can tell that this is a huge universe and that there's a lot to uncover in it. But I was also impressed by the graphic quality. Like, this is what you would expect from a AAA game. So I was very surprised when I launched this, and you know, there's animated cutscenes. It's a fully detailed world, and there's not any corners cut. There's even voice acting. So I was just like,
"Well, I mean, Mercury Steam is a fairly well-known company. Like, they did Castlevania: Lords of the Shadow. They worked on Metro Samus Returns. So, like, they're a pretty good studio. Doing. Yeah, it's not like it's an indie company here.
So." I mean, it really is for free. You can't, at the very least, try it out. What have you got to lose?
Yeah. And then the next question is...
You may get very quickly involved in the story. Yes.
Next question is, $10 for the Alien Myths Mission Pack. Is that worth grabbing?
Absolutely. That's only $10?
Yeah.
See?
Yeah, each of the campaigns are going to be $10.
$10 for a 4-hour campaign is a really, it's a pretty good deal.
And then what are your thoughts on the replayable $40 Founders Pack?
I don't have the Founders Pack. But in all reality, if it continues at the pace and the storytelling quality that it's currently on, I wish I had the Founders Pack, because it's really good, and I'm going to lose a lot of time just repeatedly going through these stories and going into multiplayer and pissing people off because I'm not good. There's a lot of tactic involved that I wasn't expecting, because again, I'm going to punch them in the head. You know?
Well,
I feed them into me. Let's poke them with a stick. But,
if people decide to jump on the $10 pack now, I was talking with Jose at Mercury Steam, and he said that after the second campaign is out, they're going to be looking into new options for people who may have just bought the first episode, but then wanted to you know, get in with the full season pass afterwards. So hopefully when the second campaign is out, we'll know more about people being able to upgrade to the full season.
Usually that's something that's an option with other games, is that if you do buy the DLC and then you decide you want the season pass later, you get some kind of discount or something. Yeah.
They said they'll announce it in due time. So I guess we will see.
I hate waiting for things.
Next game to talk about.
But go ahead.
You're fine. Next game to talk about is called Judge, developed and published by 10 Tons. It released October 3rd on PS4, October 4th on Steam. It'll be October 6th on Xbox One for $14.99. Build your judge. Enter Edenburg. Get out alive. Build your own cybernetic judge in this lawful but awful rogue hate top-down shooter, where you get to eradicate crime in the never-sleeping megacity of Edenburg. Cole, what is Judge? Or Jidge? Or Jidge?
It's Jidge.
Is it Jidge?
The great debate of how to pronounce this, but I am fairly certain it is actually Jidge. And throughout the campaign, anywhere that there's supposed to be a U, there's a Y. And anywhere there's supposed to be a Y, there's a U.
Interesting.
So it is in all of the story lore and everything that carries through. And that leads to my one biggest statement about it, is that I wish there was more backstory to this, because it does just throw you in. And there is the whole little blurb about how the criminal justice system has been reformed, and you basically have judge, jury, and executioner all in one now. And he looks like your old-fashioned judge, but it's very Judge Dreddish.
Or Jidge-dreddish.
Jidge-dreddish. It's so hard to pronounce, and I feel like I'm saying it like I'm drunk.
You're a fucking judge.
But it's humorous, but the game itself isn't particularly, like, it doesn't feel like they're striking out for humor, so it's kind of an odd combination, but at the same time it manages to work somehow. This is developed. Where did I get produced from? It's developed by the same group that did Neon Chrome. And it's pretty evident. It does take place in the same Neon Chrome universe. I didn't play Neon Chrome.
Really? You should do that.
So I'm not sure. I know. I'm not sure if, like, the whole crime aspect has something to do with that. I thought maybe it did, because I haven't, like I said, I haven't played it, so I was just flying by the seat of my pants there. But it is set in the Neon Chrome universe. There's even mentions to it, like there's a channel Neon that tells the news, and Neon is written the same as the Neon Chrome font. So it's a very obvious, not sequel, but same universe type situation.
Gotcha.
It is played as a twin stick shooter. From what I've seen of Neon Chrome, it's like the same kind of mechanics, gameplay-wise, as what you had in Neon Chrome. You have a map with a series of emergencies, situations that you can take care of as the Jidge. I'm still feeling like I'm drunk every time I say that. But you choose from the mission list which one you're going to take on. And each mission will have one primary objective and three sub-objectives, if you will, so secondaries, that are optional. But if you're going to progress, you have to eventually do them, whether you like it or not. It doesn't matter if you're any good at doing the level without taking damage. If you want to move on to Act 2, you're eventually going to have to do that level without taking damage. Is the type of challenges there are. It will be something like save all the hostages, take no damage, complete the level in 20 seconds, complete the level without being spotted, kill all the riot leaders. There's just a variety of things will come up relating to each level. Then once you only need to complete the main objective to unlock the next mission in the act, because it is broken up into three different acts. So with Act 1, you have your primary call and the main mission, and you complete that, and it unlocks the next mission in Act 1. Once you do all the missions in an act, hardcore mode becomes available, and you can replay those missions for extra. You get a square. It's kind of like a star for completing the submissions, but instead you get a square. It's very, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? Sterile.
I don't know what's your word.
Instead of being like sparkly with a star, it's kind of just sterile and it's a square. So it gives you the squares, and you can complete all the missions just by doing the main mission in Act 1 and then start Act 2. But Act 2 will be blocked off if you don't have enough of the squares. So you're forced to go replay Act 1 on hardcore to acquire the extra squares to unlock the first mission of Act 2.
Oh, wow.
If that makes You cannot just, like, plow through it all on easy and be like, ha, I beat it, I'm done. You have to replay, and you have to replay it on hardcore.
So it's kind of like the retro games from, like, NES days, where if you beat it on an easy mode, it's like, eh, yeah, fun. Now try it on a harder difficulty play more of the game.
Yeah, it's a forced replay, and it's very much like, oh, good job. We held your hand. Now suck it up, bitch.
Well, it sounds like it encourages replayability and it varies things up enough so that it, at least it's not boring when you're having to replay.
It did. And there's things you can do to make some of those extra missions easier. For example, you can play through it once and there may be a key that unlocks a door. And you may have to go all through that map, pretty complicated maze of killing out enemies to get to that key. But you get it, and you get to that door, and you get it unlocked. That door is now permanently unlocked. So the next time you play that level, that door is already unlocked, and you can just walk right in and kill the boss and get out, and you complete it in 20 seconds.
Oh, that's cool.
So it does... If you're careful and you pay attention to the missions and to the map layout and what is where, as you learn it, you will get through them much more quickly. I even managed to do some in as fast as 16, 17 seconds last night.
Oh, nice.
So it can be done. It seems when it pops up and it says, complete the level in 20 seconds, you're like, yeah, fuck you. No. Don't you see where that boss is at? I ain't getting over there. But you can eventually, you know, work it out. Take your time, replay. And learning the level design and applying that to the missions is key to actually succeeding. As you succeed and you unlock these squares, these aren't just used for unlocking further missions. These are used for upgrading your judge, and his gavel, which is his weapon. It is a gun with a gavel on the end. It's exactly what it sounds like. But you can upgrade and... You confiscate money from the levels and from the enemies as you kill them. So between, you know, unlocking extra slots to upgrade with the squares, you have to pay for these upgrades. But you can buy a rocket launcher for your gavel. And then you've got rockets and you can take out the bigger bosses more quickly and make that 20-second, you know, run if you really need to. You can upgrade drones that will follow the Jidge around and, you know, shoot lasers at any enemies that he comes across. Or my favorite was I made the Jidge electric. So if I got close to enemies, it would immediately electrify them. So could do was wait for them to get close to a corner where I was hiding. And then when they'd walk by, zap, and then they wouldn't see me and I wouldn't even have to waste any ammunition on them. And they were just instantly dead. That became... one of my favorite things to do was like try to see the map and figure out where I was going to lure people into getting electrocuted because I'm a questionable person.
That's not a bad thing.
It was just so fun. In addition to, you know, like unlocking the doors and stuff, there's explosive barrels around. You can blow up a wall. If one of the missions had where I had to destroy a death machine, and that thing just kept trapping me over and over and over. And then one run, I got a shot in on an explosive barrel. Of course, I died because I stood too close to the barrel because I'm a jackass. But the next time, that wall was still gone. And I was just able to zoom right through there and take out the death machine without even having to try. So it really, even though, you know, dying is a punishment, if you will, you have to start all over, there's benefits to it because you can change the map to ways that are going to benefit you the next time around.
Nice. So, $15. What is your verdict on this one?
Buy it. Yeah, it's worth it. It really was. I didn't expect to like it as well as I did, and yet I just kept wanting to get further and further. And I got frustrated by the whole, I need more squares to unlock this next chapter or whatever, because I was like, I just want to keep going. I don't, I've already done those 700 times because I die a lot.
Get better.
Yeah, but I was forced to get better. And then by the time I got to some of the later levels, I was like, huh, I'm pretty good at this. So yeah, it's a buy it. I had a lot of fun.
Nice.
I'm going to play more.
Nice. I know 10 Tons is, they've been just crushing it with their twin stick shooters. And I think they actually have another one in the works called Tesla versus Lovecraft, I think.
Oh, my.
So, and they just had Time Recoil come out recently as well.
You're right.
They are kicking ass. And then earlier in the show, we talked about Sparkle 2, which just came out on the Switch.
I was the first person to beat Sparkle 2 on Xbox One Nightmare.
Wow.
Yeah. So fancy, right?
I know.
Like, I didn't get the 1K first because it fucked me over because you had to beat hard separately from beating Nightmare. And I was trying to stack it, but I was the first person to beat Nightmare.
That'll teach you.
I'll take my satisfaction where I can get it.
Nice. Well, since I just brought up the Switch, I'm going to take care of a game real quick called Tower of Babel, developed and published by EnjoyUp Games. It released September 28th on the Switch for $9.99. Get ready to enjoy a semi-runner gameplay in 1, 2, 3 dimensions. Experience the most daring of deeds with the Moark Knight, I think. Moark Knight, something like that. Reset the balance of the mysterious Towers of Babel. This is, as mentioned, somewhat of an auto-runner. You have significantly more control over your character in this than in most runners where, you know, most auto runners, you just go and then you tap jump every now and then or switch lanes, whatever. This one, yeah. You are able to adjust your speed so you can move yourself quicker, or if there's an obstacle coming up, like in some of the stages, there will be like walls like smashing down into the ground or walls of spikes or, you know, like wrecking balls dropping down that you have to make sure that you avoid, and you can slow yourself down so you could try getting, you know, waiting for it to smash and then run through. The big twist with this game is that each world or each era has 3 different stages that you have to go through. And the basic gameplay is you run up the tower, you have to collect gems along the way. You have to collect a certain number of gems to beat that first part of the stage. And then once you deposit those gems, you'll run down the tower. This time you only have 60 seconds to complete the run, although they do have time pickups that you could grab on the way down to extend your time. The big twist between the 3 stages is that the first stage, the first tower that you do in each world, has 1 plane. So you're basically just speeding yourself up and slowing yourself down and jumping over things. The second stage has 2 lanes that you can be in. So you have to make sure that you're not only, you know, jumping over obstacles or ducking under obstacles or slowing yourself down, speeding yourself up or whatever, but you have to make sure that you're in the right lane as well. So you have to move left and right, or technically up and down will switch which lane you're in. But, you know, thankfully you're able to change lanes while you're in the air, slow yourself down in the air. So it's not overly difficult or anything like that, but it's enough to keep things changing. The third stage adds a third lane, and this time, instead of the camera being on the side, it's behind you. So now instead of left and right being speed up and slow down, left and right changes which lane you're in, up and down changes your speed. So it's cool that they're always finding, you know, they're keeping things mixing up and changing things as you're going through it. So it's not just another runner level, another runner level, another runner level. That said, it's basically going to be the same 3 styles of stages over and over as you go through the different worlds. It's like you're going through different eras of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, so the scenery changes, the obstacles change. They add in pits, and later in the game, they add in like a jetpack that you can have. So it's constantly adding things and keeping it fresh, but the core gameplay is still going to be the same the whole way through. It is an enjoyable game. I think the biggest thing holding it back is the fact that it released on the 28th with like over a dozen other Switch games.
Oh.
Yeah. Like last week was nuts with the Switch, and I think if it would have come out a week earlier or a week later, it would have had a better chance to shine. As it stands at $10, I got to give it a try because it's a fun, enjoyable game. It has, you know, a great style to it. The music is good, although like techno rave music doesn't fit well with the game, but it's enjoyable music, so I can't really knock it that much. It's just the biggest problem is how many other games released on the same day, and there's such good quality stuff that came out that day as well. So that's going to be the biggest obstacle, is whether or not people didn't buy other stuff and have the money to pick this one up, or if they, you know, only bought 11 of the 14 other games. Because there's a lot of shit that came
14
out.
14 games for the Switch. That's like its entire library right there.
You'd be surprised. The Switch is Switch is picking up. I think this is the fourth.
It does
Switch
sound like
game.
It's doing better for getting more and more games. So it's.
I want to say this is the game. Fourth one we've talked about this show. Yeah, because we talked about Butcher, Sparkle 2, Arcade Archives, Mario Brothers, and now this one. All on the same day, and that's only a handful of the games from that day.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. But yeah, overall, it's a fun, enjoyable game. So, you know, try it. It's enjoyable. I wish it came out at a better time.
Nice.
And then
sorry.
Final game to talk about tonight is called Inversus Deluxe, developed and published by Hypersect. It released, shocker, September 28th on the Switch. And then it will be coming out October 4th on Xbox One for $14.99. Face off against friends and challenge enemy swarms as opposites collide in the negative space combat of Inversus. A dynamic board makes each round evolve into a unique battlefield. Cole, what did you think of Inversus Deluxe?
I really like this. I winced a little when you said the price, though. I'm not going to lie. But this was so... I guess you pay a higher price when multiplayer is involved.
Yeah.
I enjoyed this so much when we played this game. It's so simple, and yet it keeps you going. Like, I wish I had words to explain why I just wanted to keep playing at it, but I think it was more just the sheer fact, like, fuck it, I know I can win this time. And that might have been what kept me going. Because, like I said, it's incredibly simple. It's basically just a square grid. And as you unlock more levels, the grid does change from being just square to having extra benefits, like having cutout areas that you cannot shoot through or wrapping around the screen or what have you. But it all retains that same black and white grid.
Well, we should probably explain what the game is first, because you're talking about the stages, and we didn't even talk about what the game is. There's two different modes in the game, and what we played the most was versus mode, which is either one-on-one or 2v2 of black versus white shooter. It's a top-down view. It's not really a twin-stick shooter, because all the shooting is done with the four face buttons instead of the other analog stick. So it's only four direction shooting, but you move with the left analog stick and you shoot with the face buttons. If you are in the white space, you can only move in the white space. And when you shoot the black space, it converts it to white. And the goal is to shoot your opponents.
And if you're in the black space, you can only move around the black space, and it inverses.
I get it.
So the goal is to make as much of the board your color and to trap the other player, and then you can shoot them and eliminate them. I think it's a first to three was the way it chose the winner. At that point, like, I was just paying attention to each individual round and getting mad when Joe shot me.
I like how we would have, like, a 20, 30-second long round of, like, dodging and running around, and then start the next round, I kill you in 2 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah, basically. And then when I caught on to what you were doing, I was able to at least fight back a little bit. Because if you're not really paying attention, or if you're kind of contemplating and trying to, I'm an overthinker. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to try to go this way and I'm going to go down and come up behind him when he's not expecting. And then you would just like, shoot, and I was gone. And that was that. Please don't ask me to repeat those sound effects.
And many of the stages have like screen wraps. So you can exit on the left, come in on the right. And the way the stages are laid out is that they're actually zoomed out further. So you could see yourself twice on a stage. Or more, that depending on how it is.
Yeah, that was stressful, was when you could see the extra goo. Or if I thought
that was fun.
Well, like, I could see two of you, and I would be like, okay, but which one is actually the one that's going to shoot? Do I need to go left? Do I need to go right? Doesn't matter. You're both places.
It makes you think. It makes you have to work for it instead of just a mindless shooter. And it
can be tricky with the shooting, too, because the screen wrap isn't just for the player. It affects the bullet. So you were able, you know, to press X and have the bullet go, you know, to the left or whatever. And then it would wrap around and come from what would it be expected to be the B side. And you were just like, that's not where he shot me from. I wasn't expecting to be shot from. That's not how this game plays. But it is how the game plays. And basically, you take advantage of being able to wrap the board around or to misconstrue where you're at to trick the other player and to trap them and eliminate them.
Indeed. I also appreciate the fact that it's not unlimited ammo. You basically have 5 bullets. And they'll eventually regenerate, but that way you can't just spam the whole time. Right. You could also hold the button down for a charge shot, which does like a 3 spread.
Yeah.
There's also power-ups that give you a faster shot. So if you could pick up a power-up and charge up, you could shoot a super fast triple shot at your opponent and just catch him off guard. There's also an arcade mode, which is basically you versus waves upon waves of enemy blocks coming at you that you gotta, you know, survive as long as you can.
And again, they're stuck there in the black zone and you are in the white zone, and they are limited to only being able to move, but as they move into the white areas, they can convert them to black ones. So it makes it harder for you because it's easier for the rogue blocks to flip the tiles, whereas you have to shoot them and you cannot move into them just to flip them like they can.
Yeah.
But they can't shoot. Well, that's not entirely fair. Some of them can shoot. As you progress, it gets harder, and there are some that will also shoot your ass. But the others are just limited to being, you know, as they can move around. But they can, they come in such large droves that they flip the tiles on the board very quickly, and you can find yourself cornered if you're not careful.
No, easily. Or they'll just spawn on top of you, which is always fun.
Yeah, there's no concern for them spawning where you're at. If when you see the glow of where they're about to pop up, you either get the fuck out of the way or you lose your life.
Now, I know you said you kind of winced at the price, but $15 doesn't really bother me for this, and I'll tell you why. We've seen a bunch of these local multiplayer games come out that either don't have online, don't have a single player mode, or both. And this game has single player arcade mode or single player versus bots. It has online play versus and online arcade. I think it more than makes up for the $15 asking price. Plus, there's tons of unlockables as you level up in the game.
That is a good point. I think it just caught me off guard. I don't know. I'm a cheapskate. I'm a cheapskate. And I'll admit it, and I'm okay with that. And it is a fair price. Of course, if this game didn't have online, I don't think it would do well at all. Not because it's not fun, but just because the ability to be able to sit down and be like, just find a friend who has the game too, or find somebody random and load up and go at it with this shooter style, or team up with somebody for arcade, that's its major selling point to me.
Yeah.
Like, I wish we saw more of that in the indies that we review so very many of. So, even though I'm like, $15, at the same time, I'm like, but it fucking has online. Yes! So, it, even if it wasn't as fun as it was, I'd have to give it just a couple bonus points. But at least it was fun. I mean, I really enjoyed just sitting there and going back and forth over, oh, you got me. Fuck you. It was my turn. And, you know, went teaming up in arcade and just letting the board get full of the you know, enemies and trying to rack up those crazy combo chains. I do wish that the bar for score wasn't so high to unlock some of those other levels, though.
Yeah, that's going to be brutal getting some of those.
Those are a little tough. And there are so many levels. I think that was the other thing, too. When we were playing versus, we were just unlocking levels left and right. And I think I counted, I said there was, what, 29?
Something. There's a shitload of stages something in the game.
Like, there was 29 that we hadn't unlocked, and that was after we'd unlocked 5 or 6. So, there's a shit ton of levels there. And there's not as many for arcade, but what is there is just locked behind these massive high scores that you have to get. Maybe people that are better at it than me. Joe's probably going to go and play it and unlock them all on his own and be like, yeah, fuck you, Eternal.
Yeah, I'm going to try going single player soon if my system plays along and see how I do on my own.
You're going to be like, next week, you're going to be like, so how many of those arcade levels did you unlock? And I'm just going to be sitting there going, you can't see it, but I'm flipping you the bird.
So $15, what's your verdict?
I still give it a buy it. Even if I win, so I'm a cheapskate, but it's worth it. It was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. I would give it a very recommended try it, just because if you don't have people to play with, it won't be as fun. But I could see this being an insane party game. Or even just playing online with friends. So.
Yep. Well, I was already trying to convince my friend to get it to play with me this week when it comes out. I'm like, yeah, we're going to lose a lot of time to this.
Oh, well, Cole, thank you so much for joining and talking games with me. Cole, do you have any final words to end the show?
No, I never do. Thanks for listening to us, though.